first got hired, I made sure I asked Al Jaffe, who was in the talent office. Right. I was just like, hey, I'm just curious. Am I the first Muslim hired? He's like, yeah, yes, you are.
Wow.
And it's like, yeah, I mean, listen, there have been obviously trailblazers in other disciplines much more important than me being the first Muslim sportscaster at ESPN. But to your point, it's pretty cool when I go to the mosque or I meet kids who say, hey, man, I had no idea you're a Muslim. It's so cool to see you on ESPN. I didn't think, you know, you've inspired me. I've met guys in Canada who said the same thing to me. So obviously it's something you take pride in. You appreciate. The next day, I don't know if Carl texted him or whatever, but Shill texts, and this is what he said. He goes, hey, I know you know me well enough to know I'm not racist, but if I upset you or your family, I'm sorry. So I talked to him the next day, and he goes, listen, dude, I am so sorry. And you know, we've all made mistakes. You know when someone is sincere and genuine, and right. He must have apologized a half a dozen times. Like I said, if somebody sees what he says and goes, I think he is a repulsive, repugnant human being, you can hold whatever belief you want. But I've actually worked with a guy. He was right. A teammate of mine. And like, I miss working with him. And that's genuine. If you ask those guys, did he make comments that were uncomfortable at times? Absolutely.
Right.
Did he say stuff that was probably out of line? Yeah, he did.
Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer's Bette Marston. And today, we have an in-studio guest. That is not something that has frequently happened on the Sports Illustrated podcast. In fact, it's only happened twice before today. Paul Heyman, the phenomenal WWE figure, one of the great interviews we've done. And Zach Lowe, the NBA writer, columnist, and wonk for ESPN. Both were in studio. And now today, our third in-studio guest is ESPN host Adnan Virk. I'll give his background very quickly. He's Canadian, so we like that already. From 2003 to 2009, he hosted several programs on The Score, which I believe now has been folded into Rogers. Adnan can correct me if I'm wrong on that. He worked for Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment as a host and reporter for Raptors Television, Leafs TV, and Gold TV Canada before he headed to ESPN in 2010. He's now worked at ESPN for 6 years. You've seen him on many things from college football to Baseball Tonight, filled in many times for Oberman, done a lot of stuff for ESPN Radio. Adnan Virk, to me, is one of the most versatile people at ESPN. I would actually say he's underserved in that I think his versatility sometimes hurts him because he's not a specialist in one thing, and I always tend to think that specialists at ESPN are the ones who really get more notice and certainly get more money. But we'll ask him about that. Maybe he disagrees, but he's very talented and can do a lot of different things. He's also the first Muslim anchor to be hired by ESPN, and we will get into that because that's very interesting, in particular with the election season. All right, I've now done this ridiculous intro with Adnan in front of me.
How awkward was it that horrible. I was sitting here
Bette and I want to walk out now and just let you host a podcast.
I've always wondered this because I'm like, are they actually listening to the entire thing? Because you'll get this, you know, elaborate waxing poetic about Doc Emmerich. Like, all right, Doc, let's bring it in. I'm like, does he listen to the whole thing?
No, God, no.
But I'm right here in your face, 2 feet away,
which is why I was not looking at you directly. I had to look at my phone.
I was stifling my laughter.
All right, Adnan, before we get into some interesting stuff, who should we name drop first? John Skipper, president of ESPN, your agent, Nick Khan, who I know, I'm actually surprised doesn't have a hidden camera in this room to find out what's going on. ESPN PR executive, David Scott,
who I would say at the moment is
the only PR person I'm sort of currently at war with. Who else should we name drop? Is there anyone else? Danny Cannell, who I know loves me.
Oh, Cannell has many questions that I have on behalf of Danny. I want everyone to be honest here, Rich, because listen, you know I am a dedicated listener to the podcast.
Which is unbelievable.
I'm already pumped. I met Bette Marsden. Are you kidding me? I came 3 hours in the train.
Do you know Bette?
Where's Alan Kim?
Bette Marsden, Alan Kim is in the newsroom right now. The most exciting
Get in here, Kim.
The most exciting Bette Marsden was when Katie Nolan came in. One of her
you guys
that love. For her that for her was amazing. No, listen, Bette is
not excited to meet me.
Not nearly as excited to meet you as she was for Katie Nolan. But that's less about you, I think,
and
more about Katie
Nolan.
She
thought I was like an intern here. I'm like, hi, I'm Adnan Virk. I'm unaware of what you do here,
sir. Adnan's like, I'm sorry, I only watch Rogers Sportsnet.
I want everyone to be honest here, though, Rich, because listen, you've had some of the greats. You've had Doc Emmerich. You've had Scott Van Pelt. Gus Johnson. Jay Onwright, phenomenal. Julie Stewart Banks, the other Canadians, Bob McKenzie. People are wondering, like, who is this Adrian Kirk guy you have on?
Right.
So let's be honest. Originally, and I know Bette's going to be upset here. Rich, you're going to be upset. Originally, this was the guest list for today. It was a round table. Skip Bayless,
Right.
We had Piers Morgan in.
That would be fantastic.
Marsha Keegan.
Darren Rovell.
Darren Rovell.
Clay Travis, Jason Whitlock, Jamie Horowitz.
Those were
Charlie
supposed to be
Dixon.
Correct. They all canceled, and that's why I'm here.
Pete Vasilka. Listen, Adnan, you're here because you have an interesting story.
Hang on. Remember when you said to Piers Morgan, he called you slovenly, and he said, he called you Dick Deitch, and then you said, my weight may fluctuate.
Right, but your ratings always go down. And the greatest thing about that fight was that Chrissy Teigen and John Legend came to my defense, which is incredible.
That's
and will
insane.
Never happen, and will never happen again.
You're going to get John Legend in here, man.
SI does have a connection with John Legend because of Chrissy, who a lot of people here know, given her swimsuit stuff. He's a very big college basketball fan.
Really?
Yeah, and he's picked games for us, and nice guy. Those are four super, like, sort of celebrity couple there. They're very cool people.
All right, tell a David Scott story?
No. Adnan, we've name-dropped enough in the first
Is Doc Emmerich still listening to the podcast if he's downloaded
it? Doc Emmerich is not listening. The only people listening right now are CAA officials, Mike Soltis in the ESPN PR department. All right, Adnan.
Lobby Rachel Siegel. Go ahead.
There you go. Adnan, listen, but let's pretend this is A-Block. Stay on focus.
You're right.
How surprised were you by the defections of Skip Bayless and Mike Tirico?
Going out of the gate with the big boys. Yeah. Tirico, I was stunned by, Rich, because I was like, I know Mike a little bit, and I heard some rumors and stuff, but I was like, listen, he's an institution. He's been here for 25 years. He's not going anywhere. So when you hear the news, you go, oh, my God, like, what was the deal that they offered? Like, Mike does everything he wants at ESPN. He's phenomenal. I'm sure it's not just money. I know him a little bit. He's not motivated by just finances. Everybody would like a nice paycheck, but Mike cares about the job, being passionate about it. Like, what happened? So, of course, I texted him like everybody else, and I'm calling up right now.
That live.
So I texted him, and he just said, I said, hey, Mike, I'm stunned by this. I'm going to miss you as a friend and as a valued colleague, but I hope everything works out for you. Most of all, I care about you as a person. And he said, thank you, Adnan, for reaching out. Love that they recognize how amazing your talent is. You have every club in the bag. Keep swinging. Proud to call you a friend. You know, we'll be in touch. So clearly Mike did not divulge why exactly he was leaving. But I was stunned, man, just because, like you said, he's so versatile. He can do so many things. My first thought was, though, maybe now he gets to call a Super Bowl, because that's one thing the ESPN doesn't have. As great as Monday Night Football is, you go to NBC, and if perhaps he one day supplants Al Michaels in a couple years, maybe, I don't know, maybe he can call Super Bowl one day. And the fact he can do some golf, unfortunately, we don't have as much golf coverage as we used to. We still have the Masters, but not as much as we used to. So I figure maybe, you know what, after 25 years, Mike figures it's something different, and we move on. And obviously, we're going to miss him. He's still here for a little bit, so he's not leaving imminently. As far as Skip is concerned, the rumblings have been going around because everyone's like, listen, man, that's Horowitz's boy. Like, Jamie's going to make sure he's going to get him at FS1
right. And
whatever it takes. And I know Skip a little bit. Again, we don't travel in the same circles. You know, my posse is a little different than his. I'm not on First Take. But whenever I've seen him, he's actually a nice guy. He's down to earth. Yeah, like
right. Behind the scenes, he's got a good rep.
I just gave my brother.
Which I would argue makes him more loathsome than, by the way, on TV. But go ahead.
My brother, I gave him like a tour, and we just happened to see Skip there. And I'm like, hey, did you want a picture? I said to my brother, he's like, oh, I think I'm okay. And Skip played it off. He's like, oh, it's all right. But then he was like, I saw you calling a spring training game, you and Kirk Jin. I'm like, oh, yeah, thanks, man. Me and Dallas Braden. So it was a pleasant chat. So as far as Skip's concerned, listen, I'm sure he got offered a nice deal. I make comparable money. I know that you released the contract details. And you know what? I have a similar signing bonus
right.
in my contract. So
I've
you know
heard.
What? With that kind of money, I can appreciate where he's going. But I also want to dispute something. You and Oran think you guys are so smart and so clever.
Right.
I'm actually the leader in the clubhouse to replace him on First Take.
Would love to see that.
So you go ahead with tweeting the Will Cain right. stuff. But I'm actually in there. McDonough's the leader for Monday Night Football, but I'm a close second.
Right.
So
I love the Will Cain reference. Do you think, by the way, that Mike Tirico has that cut and paste for everybody who emails him? You got a lot of clubs in the bag. Fantastic.
Absolutely. He was like, wait, what name? It wasn't even him texting. He had like his wife do it. He goes, hang on a second. Adnan. Yeah, okay, don't put Adran. He gets that a lot.
Right.
Okay, go
he
with that.
He just literally sent that to Kevin Connors.
Max Brennan's got the same thing. Todd Grisham, all of them. Man, Tirico loves me.
You made some good points there in terms of Tirico, because I think people thought he was a lifer, 25 years at the company, the best portfolio, maybe Dean Fowler, but for sure. So you do think about, you're like, okay, he can get the Super Bowl at NBC, which is huge. I think I would have, having not talked to Mike, and I did try to reach out to him, you know, obviously these guys are all going to decline now.
Do you want me to text him for him now?
Do you think the Olympics were a big thing for him? Do you think that's the inducement, or is the real inducement Sunday Night Football and you get a Super Bowl and you're essentially – because that package is considered the NFL's primary package, you're the number one NFL guy.
I think it's more the football. And again, Mike and I haven't ever discussed the Olympics. Like, I don't know his thoughts on the luge. Like, I'm a big ski jumping guy. That would be something I'd want to do one day.
Is that right?
Absolutely. Are you kidding? I'm dead serious right now. The Winter Olympics, I love ski jumping.
By the way, as someone who's covered many Olympics, Poland, of course, dominates in ski. In
phenomenal. Like, how do you get your kids to do that? You have twins. How at one point do you go, you know what?
Well, you moved to Krakow, I assume, and trained them.
You couldn't train them here in New York. There's got to be a ski jumping complex.
Nice.
This is New York City. You know, multicultural and diverse this place is?
Yeah, that might be one tough one to figure out. figure out.
So I think the Olympics may have been a... Listen, no matter what people say about the Olympics, and guys like you will point out the fact it loses money sometimes for the network. Like, right. It's not even close, right? You're paying so much for the rights.
Although NBC will say it, and NBC will always claim it makes money. I think sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. I think they play a little bit
really?
With the numbers. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe it's not necessarily a loss leader. Obviously, you get a ton of attention. I've always felt the Olympics... I don't know if you and Ben are the same way, but like I find hardcore sports fans aren't as big into the Olympics.
I would agree with that.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm still watching baseball. Like, I'm
but Bette and I are. Someone I've been there to eight, and she has been an Olympics editor at a couple. So
right.
You're talking to two people who love the Olympics.
Right, but I'm telling you, I know hardcore sports fans that go, yeah, I don't care about swimming.
I agree.
Right?
Yeah.
Why would I care about it normally? So I'm not going to be into it for once every 4 years. So I think for Mike, it's football, and those are some big-time gigs, man. Like, I think ESPN's as good as it gets, but you tell me, NBC, Sunday Night Football is the number one rated show
for huge money.
Right. Michaels and Costas are huge names.
Yeah, I agree. So there's been a lot of like this narrative out there, and it's not a true narrative because you have to really look at it on an individual basis, who's left and why they've left. And did ESPN make the decision for them to leave, or did they leave on their own accord?
Right.
But there's this sort of, you know, there's stories out there about...
You think the ship is sinking.
Yeah, mass exodus at ESPN when that's really not the case. These are maybe my words, so if anybody's listening, like Marcia Keegan, or if you just calm down, these are my words.
Bill Hoffheimer just texted me.
No, God. Reality is that a ton of people behind the scenes at ESPN lost their jobs, which is, as you know, Adnan, for you, a horrible couple of weeks
and
really changed the shape of ESPN. But in terms of front-facing talent, the numbers are really not that many, and it doesn't change at its core what ESPN does. So this is my long preamble to ask you, as someone who works in-house, when you are talking to other ESPN radio people, other SportsCenter anchors, et cetera, do you sort of like comment on the fact that it seems like the story out there is a little overplayed versus what the reality is in-house?
Absolutely, because they'll send out numbers sometimes, Rich, saying, all right, the talent office has renewed 95%
right.
of anchors who are up. So I'm like, oh, my God, if we're anchors, analysts, play-by-play, whoever it is, commentators, if the majority of people, the vast majority of people are staying, like, I get the fact, man. I'm a huge Keith Olbermann fan.
Right.
I'm upset that Keith's gone. I miss watching the show. I love the guys that work on that show, Dave Cerosi, J.B. Kritz, Matt Collette, Darren DiMaterio, all those guys. Like, that was a highlight of my career. So obviously, I miss that, and that's a big deal when Keith leaves, when Colin Cowherd leaves, when Bill Simmons leaves. So I totally understand that. I'm not disputing the fact that that should be a headline, and that is major news that a talent like Mike Tirico or Skip Bayless is leaving. But the majority of men and women there want to stay and actually do stay. And whether or not it's a different world and there's cost-cutting, like, I'm honest, I'm telling you, I swear to God, I don't get that vibe walking the halls that, oh, my God, we're in a cost-cutting mode. I really don't. It's an individual basis, and if some guys get big offers somewhere else, great for them. But I don't feel like all of a sudden ESPN is going to be penurious all of a sudden.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think, you know, I would think as talent, too, you know, you're going to sort of be in a certain kind of silo
right.
where the people who are the management people sort of can understand and see the numbers. But here's a perfect example. I mean, like, literally, like, you read the, like, trades today, and ESPN's talking about, like, purchasing money in BAM, you know,
right.
the MLB
Bam.
Streaming service. I mean, for $1 billion or Disney's.
$1 billion? Yeah, no, that's not true.
Whatever.
Can we get Alan Kim in here?
We need Orand in here. The point is, I mean, things have changed at ESPN, but the narrative somehow that, like, the ship is sinking.
No,
and so, I mean,
it's ridiculous.
They're building skyscrapers in Bristol.
You and Orant, listen, and by the way, you and Bette are welcome anytime. You guys come with me. I'll give you an entire tour of Bristol.
Bette will go. I will not.
What would happen if I walked in with you in Bristol? Seriously.
So I might be
this is my friend Richard Deitch. Can we sign him in? What would happen?
It'll be like Guantanamo, basically. It would not be
There's
good.
There's waterboarding taking place.
Right. I think at that point, I feel like Kevin Connors would be getting your gigs.
Another Kevin Connors shout out. We love Kev. He's the best. But to your point, you and Orant talked about this. You said CBS Sports Network is barely a ripple. And I love
not,
Gottlieb.
Not even rated.
Right. And I love Gottlieb. Dougie was great to me. Jay Will told some inflammatory stories about
him.
Yeah,
why don't you mention on this podcast, in fact.
Yeah, he talked about the fact
he
that
he said Doug sold him
the,
out on the air, which is the worst thing you could do to an on-air person.
Which is crazy, but I got to tell you, when I first started filling in, the first show I filled in for was the Doug Gottlieb show. And if you think he's insecure or intimidating, he was like, dude, you crushed it. He was off, and he was like, I heard you. You sound great. You got to get this guy some more gigs. I'll take more days off.
Wow.
Dougie was great to me. So, and I think his show, I don't know how much you bet watch, it was pretty good. But it shows
the ESPN show or the one at CBS?
That Doug does at CBS.
Right. Yeah, so it's
right.
Fine. Yeah.
He's outspoken. In some ways, he's underrated as a radio guy.
A little too much outspoken for me sometimes. I mean, the guy, you know, he was the only person in America who thought the selection show was at the right length. I mean, Doug. You could be a company guy, but calm down.
But he's great at breaking down X's and O's. If you're a basketball
excellent college
terrific.
Basketball game analyst.
So my point is that just because these talent go to these networks, sometimes you're at the mercy of the network, right? Because the reach isn't there. Whereas there are some people at ESPN, like you tweeted out there, what it's like for me being underrated. How can I be underrated? That's like being underrated playing for the Yankees or the Lakers, the Cowboys, the Boston.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that being sort of under, I mean, whether you're underrated or underappreciated or not,
right.
The fact is, if you are that at ESPN, you are still, you're on the 27 Yankees.
Correct.
You know, you're not on the 89 Astros.
Like right.
So in that sense, anytime you're at a big legacy company like that, and the most, you know, easily the biggest and the most important brand in sports, you're at a destination job.
Correct.
Which does make defections like Coward, Bayless, and Tirico interesting because as Oren pointed out too, we were talking about this. It's the one place that, generally speaking, if they want the talent, they don't lose.
Yeah, and talk about that $1 million discrepancy.
That was his reporting, okay. Not mine.
Fair enough. Nice try, Oren.
But as a general rule, if ESPN wants talent, they don't lose that talent. The talent stays. Then these were three examples of people who, for whatever reason, maybe Coward wanted to be in L.A. I think Bayless just got so much money and basically a chance to work with a guy he likes, and he's going to basically have whatever kind of creative control he wants.
Right.
And Tirico, as you mentioned before, Super Bowl, Sunday Night Football, these are incredible jobs.
But let me put it on you. Right. SI is as good as it gets. Grew up reading SI.
Right.
I have an SI windbreaker I'm wearing here, for God's sakes. Look at this.
Wow.
Like I've been a subscriber for 20 years.
That looks like it's from 1962.
I'm looking for Michael Farber. That's the first thing I said to you. Where's Michael Farber?
He's swanning the bistros in Montreal.
The best story to my Michael Farber is at the Olympics. He's the guy on the bus reading an art history book.
Yeah, Michael Farber.
Farber is so cerebral.
He's the greatest. He really is like one of the great colleagues of
he's
all time.
He's unbelievable. People in Canada revere him.
On TSN.
Oh, right? He's awesome. Sports reporter. He's great.
So that's Michael Farber, Bruce Arthur, Steve Simmons, and who's the other guy?
And then Dave Hodge hosts it.
Has Hodge always hosted it?
Hodge is the
guy.
He's
like the John Saunders.
He's our John Saunders, yeah. Right.
By
John
the way, I know you privately can't say this, but the sports reporters at times is awful, right? I mean,
no, you
unwatchable.
Can't say that. Come on. Saunders is my man.
Saunders is great, but Mike Lupica, I mean, infuriating.
You've definitely had a history with. When you go at guys, let's get into this now.
Right.
Because people
By the way,
you,
I'm pretty sure Lupica and Album do not like each other. I'm almost certain of that.
I've never met either, so I can't speak. I'll ask Saunders. Right. I'll text him.
Don't ask the PR department because you're just going to get a canned response like we're investigating and we'll soon get back to you.
I'm so upset you preferred Fox PR people over ESPN PR people. Like, I just feel sensitive to that.
Well, I'll say this. It's not that I like a lot of the ESPN PR people. Mac Nanulu.
Rachel Siegel.
Rachel Siegel is great.
Bill Hofheimer.
Generally speaking, I
Hofheimer's
like him.
Tremendous. I didn't like him the first
he's good. He's good at his job, but had some kind of, I would say, had some cynical kind of PR not too long ago. With certain personality. But
is anybody still
Carrie Potts, Money in the Bank. You got Ben Cafardo, I love.
Baseball
Ben Cafardo is like the Mike Trout of that department.
Yes.
I would love to see Ben Cafardo either get a big raise at ESPN
or
get hired elsewhere for more money. Because that guy understands immediately the relationship between what he has to do to advocate his department. But at the same time, he understands what the press's role is. And I guess it's because of who his dad is, Nick Cafardo, Boston Globe writer.
And this is my point. We're talking about how
and you're
going
to get me in trouble now because there's other people, you know, J.J. Neshram, who I love. There's like a lot of people in the PR department I like. I can't name them all.
But my point is this. Right. Just so I mentioned with Farber, you got these big-time names at Sports
Amy
Social.
Phillips, solid. All right, go on.
You'd say people would never leave SI. SI is the pinnacle of sports journalism, and yet people leave here sometimes.
People do leave here.
Right?
Who left there? Chris Mannix, right?
Right. How did Mannix leave? How could he ever leave?
Because he got a gigantic offer from Yahoo.
This is my point.
You take the... Yeah.
Right. You don't want to leave ESPN, but if someone offers you the moon...
I agree.
I'll take the yacht.
So are you saying to
when
me
I
that
get
if,
Skip
if, Bleacher,
Bayless
if,
money,
if Bleacher Report quadrupled my salary, would I go?
Of course you would.
I probably would go, yeah. Quadruple. I don't know if I would do it for double.
You'd still emphasize,
I'd have to think about it. But at a certain point, I do think... But let's put it this way, and I swear to God on this, people have said this to me and they think I'm lying.
Right.
If First Take or Bayless's new show offered me $1 million to be on the show, I wouldn't do it. I swear to you on my kid's life.
Listen, I know you're a man of integrity.
I'm
and I telling know you,
believe
what you say. But
there are certain...
$1 million, Rich. The twins are taking care of.
Trust
we
me,
got
I get
private
it.
School
and
in
it
Greenwich.
And it would suck. It would be like, because my wife would hate me because it would be private school forever
Red Sox,
or
man.
Something. But there has to be, you have to be able to, and no bullshit here, you have to honestly be able to walk in your job every day and sort of respect what you are doing. And I don't think I could fake it for long enough to make it worth the dollar amount. I'm not saying, there would be some shows, I'm just telling you, particularly Those are the Bayless is someone I have no respect for professionally, and First Take is a show I have zero respect for professionally. So I don't think I could do it on any kind of basis. At the same time, there is no chance on earth they would ever be asking me this. I mean,
okay, but let me ask you this.
It's not even a hypothetical worth asking.
No, I hear you, but I've had this question from people that I'm friends with, colleagues, right. They want to know this answer. I'm telling you right now, there is bated breath on the SI Media podcast.
Nick Khan is going to be like, there's no way on earth that you wouldn't take $1 million because it's all about cash, money, Ted DiBiase.
He's like Delroy Lindo in Clockers. All he sees is green.
Your agent is the Ted DiBiase of the Angels, which I love. And I love Ted DiBiase.
$1 million man.
He walks around the CA office with a belt and a robe that says $1 million man.
We're
which
both
is fantastic.
He's going to let me go as a client because of this.
You are going to be working for Sandy Montag after
I'm
going
to have to start giving Nick 50%.
This
it's
show,
gonna be like
this
the Colonel and Elvis.
In all honesty, this show has already had like 17 inside baseball references. You're not going to be beating Onright and Bob McKenzie in the
download. No, I've
got to
beat
the
them. I've got to beat the average download. By the way, congratulations. 1 million downloads for you guys.
Thank you.
And by the way, remember
Bill
Oren.
Bill Simmons is laughing at that.
But Oren laughed at you. He said, listen, I think this would be a disaster. This is never going to work. He's thinking about me. This
not
is what he was
all.
Talking about. He goes, wait, what?
A lot of people listen to that. All right, so.
Listen, but back to my point.
Right.
Because what everyone wants to know
about
this.
We've got a lot to cover, and we haven't covered much yet.
Everyone wants to know about this.
Right.
You troll First Take all the time. You shred Skip, Stephen A. But at what point don't you just say, listen, try another
let
restaurant.
Let it go.
Try
all right.
another
I'll
restaurant.
Be very honest with you. I'll be very honest.
Try another restaurant, Deitch.
I'm not even sure I watch it that much anymore. I'll be very honest. I absolutely take my shots on Twitter at that. And if you want to say it's trolling, I'm going to copy
you. You crush Canal for trolling, and
right.
you yourself
I'm not,
are trolling.
I'm not going to. But here's the thing, Adnan. You know, privately, deep down, in places you don't want to think about, like it, from a few good men, you know this to be true. One,
watch
I'm,
me on that
I'm trolling for the light. That show is the Sith Lord of television, the Emperor Palpatine. You know that. So anytime I'm trolling Bayless, it's for good. I think people know that. And in all honesty, this is, again, total truth. I don't even care if Bayless or Canelo see it. I'm generally trolling so the management sees it. Like, when I say something about First Take on Twitter,
yeah.
it's directed to Marsha Keegan, John Wildeck, and Chris LaPlaca. It's not even directed to the stars of the show.
Because, by the way, you've started using their names all the time now.
Like, of course.
Why is he mentioning Wildeck
right.
and Keegan all
right.
the
Right, because
time?
I'm trying to do things differently than the Rudy Martsky era where everybody was, like, buddying up to each other at the bar,
right.
hugging each other, and it was all a game, man. The game's over. You know what I'm saying? All right, thank you. Speech is over, man.
Get off that pulpit, Deitch.
I know. It's me and Bodie right now in the park at the Wire. We're both pawns, and eventually Horowitz is going to win, but I'm at least going to try to go
to Horowitz, you had a Game of Thrones reference for him with O'Rand.
Yeah, well, Horowitz is very easy to reference because you just sort of, you think of Ramsay Bolton. You think
right.
of basically the most, you know, the character's the least likable on television.
Horowitz right. said to me when he was overseeing
this,
Oberman.
This, by the way, I'm about to give you the worst segue in the history of podcasts, but go ahead.
When I was overseeing Oberman, he emailed me. Right. He goes, by the way, you got to tell Deitch we're friends. He's going to blow his mind. And I wanted to write back, Jamie, we're not friends. Like, you're my boss. We're not going out hanging out together.
But he does. I will say this.
I appreciate your support.
I will say this about Jamie. He's very good with talent, though.
He is.
That's his,
good guy.
That's his skill, is that he understands how talent works. He understands the insecurities and the narcissism of talent.
Right.
And he's able to work within that framework. Would you agree?
Yeah, he knows.
Supportive when he knows to be supportive. Tough when he knows to be tough.
I've never seen the tough side because he knows right. how neurotic and insecure I am.
Right. What are your thoughts about him destroying the Today Show?
Is that the segue?
No.
Oh, my God.
No. He didn't. He was there for 6 weeks. You can't destroy. All right, Adnan, here's the worst segue of all time. Beth's going to shake her head, too. You are the first Muslim anchor to be hired at ESPN. Is that correct? What a segue that is.
That is correct. Amazing right. segue.
All right. So,
Horowitz and Islam.
Right. So how important is that first for you? Because, you know, in doing research, you know, as we sort of take this a little more serious, you know, there were Muslim publications and South Asia publications that have written about you, and it's for them, it's a very signature thing. And I would think, if nothing else, there could be some kids out there, you know, kids from Pakistan, whatever, South Asian kids out there who, if like they see a face that's similar to theirs,
right.
they're like, I can do this. This is, you know, we've had the Jemele Hill's on, people of color on, women on, and Jessica Mendoza very recently.
Yeah,
and
Jess.
I am of the belief that, like, you do need visual role models if you're a young person to believe that something can happen. So if nothing else, I would argue that your importance, just you being there, does present something important for a young Muslim kid in the States who's a gigantic sports fan who now believes, okay, I can be a sports center, like that sports center anchor, like, or I could be a host of Baseball Tonight. Like, that's not an impossibility for me.
I appreciate you saying that, man. It's definitely been something I take pride in. When I first got hired, I made sure I asked Al Jaffe, who was in the talent office.
Right.
I was just like, hey, I'm just curious. Am I the first Muslim hired? He's like, yeah, yes, you are.
Wow.
And it's like, yeah, I mean, listen, there have been obviously trailblazers in other disciplines much more important than me being the first
of course
sportscaster right. ESPN. But to your point, it's pretty cool when I go to the mosque or I meet kids who say, hey, man, I had no idea you're a Muslim. It's so cool to see you on ESPN. I didn't think, you know, you've inspired me. I've met guys in Canada who said the same thing to me. So obviously it's something you take pride in, you appreciate. What's happened, though, is that it's never been an issue. Like, it's never been something that I consciously think of until recently. Until, unfortunately, the rise of Muslim extremists and then Trump and Cruz and all the rest of it. So
right.
It's actually really become a topic, Rich, like within the last year. Prior to that, I really wouldn't even have thought about that. And now, all of a sudden, it's become a big topic because people go, I wonder what you think about these issues. And it's like, can I tweet about it? Can I not tweet about it?
Well, let me ask you, do you feel compelled to offer, you know, we have had a very inflammatory political season with rhetoric in relation to Islam.
No question.
So have you felt compelled on a Twitter feed, which, as we know from Kurt Schilling and others, is a public feed, right? You are a public figure, but you have beliefs, I imagine, politically. So how do you negotiate that, in particular when the subject of Islam is part of the national conversation?
That's a great question. And what I did is this. I looked at it because the people from my mosque, you know, my friends, my family are saying, hey, listen, you've got to start saying stuff. You've got to denounce this person because you have a public platform. You can influence people. So my cousin Nisrat, who lives in Jersey, was like, there's this campaign, True Islam. And you go on there, it's on the website, and it explains what Islam's all about, explains, you know, all the erroneous stereotypes and things that people have unfortunately believed because whatever they may see in the media, whatever that may be. And could we have you support it? And I said, yeah, of course. And she goes, can you give us a quote? And I said, I'm far too lazy. You write the quote and I will just agree with it and I'm sure it's fine. So she sends it a quote, it's fine. So when she first sent it, Rich, I liked it because I go, you know what? I don't want to retweet it because technically my Twitter handle says Adnan ESPN.
Man, right.
So I'm like, you know what? If it's my own thing, if it's Adnan Burke, you do what you want. But
right.
Technically if it says ESPN, I'm like,
It's a
gray area. We're not supposed to tweet politics, religion, etc. But then Easter passed, and I'm like, well, Cannell, Schlereth, Jason Romano, social media, Mike and Mike, they tweet pictures of the cross. Today's the day he's risen, etc. about Jesus.
Right.
I have Jewish friends, Andy Katz, Seth Greenberg, whatever. They talk about Yom Kippur or Rosh Hashanah.
Passover, right.
So I'm like, you know what? Maybe it's okay to do this. So the next time they tweeted it, I retweeted it. And I really want to thank, and I want to make this very clear, I appreciate it so much, from Andy Katz and Keith Law and Jessica Mendoza and Dallas Braden and Greg Colley and Adam Stank, and all these guys, Dana O'Neill, who all kind of put a retweet and say, hey, we support Adnan. Good for you. Like, this is great to speak out against extremism. And that there's, you know, you can have your faith and be proud of it, but also be a public figure and denounce whatever misinformation or negativity is associated with your faith. So I wasn't sure if somebody at ESPN PR or my suits are going to go, hey, listen, you can't be tweeting that stuff. But thankfully, there was none of that. It's actually one of the most popular tweets I've ever had. 350 retweets, 225 likes. You know what I mean? And I got a lot of negativity. Like, at first, it was like, hey, good for you, man, speaking out against extremism. But then I got a bunch of tweets. Some guys were like, hey, man, your religion's poisonous. Like, death to Islam. I'm with Trump. You guys are brutal. And I was like, this is tough stuff to read.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing to throw yourself out there and pat yourself on the back and say, look at how self-congratulatory I am. People are also supportive. But some people are not that liberal. And a lot of people are close-minded. And they said, hey, I used to like you before, but now the fact that I know you're Muslim, I don't care for you. And I don't
your
religion. Yeah, it was brutal, man.
You know, you got a sense then. And again, no man in the business faces anything like what women face online in terms of harassment. But that's interesting. That's probably the closest you have clearly come then to what the stream of invective that a lot of women in the business face daily.
Perfectly said. It was vitriolic. You know what I mean? It was offensive. It was personal. And like you said, compared to what the women face all the time, it's probably a drop in the ocean. But to me, it was impactful. And I thought, oh my God, okay, do I next time say I should say something or should I not say something? But my view was this. My bosses didn't say anything. If they'd asked me, I would have said, listen, go to what True Islam is. Check out the website.
Right.
I'm not espousing a political belief. I'm just supporting my faith and trying to clear up erroneous stereotypes. If there's an issue with that, well, then I don't understand why Christians and Jews can tweet about their faith. You know what I mean? As simple as that. If I tweeted, Rich, hey, Trump is a moron, et cetera, he's a bigot, that's different because I'm taking a personal attack against a guy who's in the public figure. That's different. But I think if I said Trump is wrong when he says you should ban all Muslims, I don't, and it's a gray area. Like I said, maybe they'd be upset, maybe they wouldn't be.
And this leads into, I think, a fair segue into Kurt Schilling, who is somebody you worked with, who you get along with. You consider him a friend?
Absolutely.
Okay, so it's good. And I think where, I mean, I don't want to spend too much time on Kurt because it sort of what has happened has happened. I'm someone who repeatedly said he should not be suspended
right.
prior to this last one. Got crushed from people. Whenever you're getting crushed from both the left and the right, maybe you're doing something
people
right.
People have always thought you're some New York liberal. Now right. they think you're some conservative yeah, because right, of the fact right. you supported Schill. Okay.
At the end, though, I think, and as I wrote, I think Kurt forced ESPN's hand to the point where they had to make a move because – and I think Schilling was a good analyst, but I think what he does as a baseball analyst, you are eminently replaceable. It's a position where you can find other people to do this, and if you become too big a headache for the company, I think they will let you go versus somebody like John Gruden or somebody making money like a Bayless or a Smith on a show. This is my words, Adam. I don't want you
to— Of course, man.
Yeah, I don't want you because, you know, this, I realize this gets into sort of management stuff. But this leads me to this. Was it tricky terrain for you when Kurt was putting stuff on his Facebook account? And I would like to believe, I don't think Kurt hates Muslims. I mean, he's been very sort of specific about,
radical Islam.
Radical Islam or extremist. Again, some people will see what he did as bigotry, other people will not. On a person-to-person basis is what I'm interested in. How did you sort of manage that relationship knowing that he's a public figure, he was putting stuff out there that you may not have particularly agreed with, but you also know the guy and generally like him and liked working with him. So that to me must have been an interesting dynamic.
Before I answer, is it neurotic or endearing that I've been rehearsing this?
I think there are certain hot spots that I think if I was your CAA agent, I'd be like, let's go this way. Bet you agree?
This was like take eight that I delivered in the mirror.
Bet shaking your head.
Like, this isn't even on video, and I'm still practicing what my facial reactions are going to be.
You're like Pacino, Scent of a Woman. You're doing like 50. You're doing like 20 different things.
I'll say this. Right. I worked with Kurt Schilling, 3 years, and we got along great. He's a fantastic analyst. He's super smart about the game of baseball. You sit with him, and you learn something every time. He's so insightful. He's really funny. He's a great guy to be around because he's always busting chops. And he's the kind of guy that will talk about politics and his beliefs, but he'll do so in a disarming way. For example, I don't eat pork. So when I'm eating pizza, I'll always order the veggie pizza or cheese, et cetera. So he'd look at the pizza and go, oh, broccoli pizza? I'm like, yeah. He goes, what, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, I eat whatever. It's veggies. He's like, oh, liberal pizza. I'm like, what are you doing? There's nothing liberal about this. Right. Oh, that's liberal pizza. Like Dallas Braden gets, pineapple on his pizza. Oh, yeah, of course, liberal pizza. That's the way you guys are. Yeah. No. So that's kind of the way he is. So it's not like I think people have this perception that he walked in the green room and goes, all right, let's talk about this hot button issue. No, he wouldn't. He'd come in. He's busting chops on each guy equally. When he found out I was Canadian, he goes, are you serious? I'm like, yeah. He goes, they hid that from me. I'm like, why? He goes, I hate Canada. I hate everything about you. Socialism, the medicine, the French language, nothing. I dislike Canadians viciously.
He likes hockey, though, I think.
He likes hockey. He likes the Bruins. That's it. So as a guy, you hang out with him. Yeah, he's a good dude. He was fun to be around. Now, what happened when he tweeted out that, by the way, is it mem or meme? I'm going to bet on this one.
Meme. I think we were saying meme.
Okay, when he sent the meme. That may have been, Rich, one of the most uncomfortable days I've ever had.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I'm driving to Williamsport, the Little League World Series, and I'm getting texts from Jonah Carey and Keith Law and my John Chick and Evering Ho and some of my best friends back home. And they're going, did you see this? Like, Schill's going to get fired. And I'm like, I felt sick to my stomach. I said, oh, my God. He tweeted out a picture of Hitler, and the meme is saying that, they said 5 to 10% of Germans were Nazis. What if, this is true with regards to Muslims?
Right.
And he's saying if those are the real numbers, it's staggering. I'm like, oh, my God. So I called my agent. I didn't want to say his name. Let's call him Kaiser Soze.
Right.
I called Kaiser. And he goes, talk to Laurie Orlando in the talent office. Talk to Phil Orleans. He runs baseball. And Laurie's the one who hired me. I owe her an incredible amount of gratitude. And she's completely conscientious and personal. She goes, listen, I got your back. I understand why you're upset. We're going to figure this thing out. Don't worry. I talked to Phil and he goes, listen, through a confluence of events, this is actually your last thing for us for baseball. You're moving to college football. Joined the leaf-fitting Bill Graff army. I'm like, yeah. He goes, so listen, we haven't announced it yet, but I don't think Schill's going to be there, okay? So you're not even going to see him. So whatever ends up happening between you guys, you'll figure it out. You want to be on the air. Because I said, now I'm having this situation. Anish Shroff, one of my best friends, he was great. We were talking on the phone. He goes, you're going to end up feeling like an Uncle Tom. But if other Muslims are watching, you're going, oh my God, how can you laugh at that
guy's
jokes?
Very tricky position for
right?
you.
Right? How can you care about his opinion about the Cubs and what he's saying about your faith?
Right.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So Phil was very understanding. We get there. I see Mark Rowe, senior vice president. He goes, listen, I talked to Schill. And he goes, I got way too long an explanation. Basically, he saw it. He wasn't really thinking. He tried to delete it. Blah, blah, blah. We'll figure it out. And then one of the guys, so I'm like, all right, we'll deal with it. Well, one of the guys mentioned, they go, well, he's won. I'm like, what do you mean? They go, Kurt Schilling won today. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, he got it out there that he's this hardline, right-wing Christian conservative. He doesn't have to come to the Little League World Series. He probably doesn't care about. And so he wins. And that really struck a chord with me. I go, well, that's not fair. So on the air, and I know Al Michaels talked about this in his book. He feels like a scoundrel or a mischief maker. I can't remember the word he actually used. But I'm like, I have to say something.
The rascal.
The rascal.
Right.
So I'm with Kirchner, and I'm out of nowhere, Rich, this has no context. I just say, oh, we're here in Williamsport. Crowd's going crazy. And I'm like, what a great place. Regardless of religion or race, it's wonderful to feel that everybody is so inclusive here. Kirchner, God love him, just completely misses what I did, goes into his spiel. Ravitch immediately texts, like, okay, great. So now you're politicizing the opening of baseball tonight. The next day, I don't know if Carl texts him or whatever, but Schilt texts, and this is what he said. He goes, hey, I know you know me well enough to know I'm not racist, but if I upset you or your family, I'm sorry. So I text back. I said, let's do this over the phone. I'll do this over text. Right. Yeah. So I talked to him the next day, and he goes, listen, dude, I am so sorry. And you know, we've all made mistakes. You know when someone is sincere and genuine. And right. He must have apologized a half a dozen times. This is a guy who should be in the Hall of Fame. He's a World Series champion. He's won a ton of games. He's been a success, everything in life. He doesn't have to apologize to me. He could just go, whatever. If Virk's upset, I don't care. I still got my job.
Well, I don't know about that. I think, I mean, just because he's
nobody
an athlete.
Nobody in management's telling him to say sorry.
I get that, but like this gets into a larger star system. Like he should have, I'm glad he apologized because he wanted to apologize to you on a human-to-human basis, don't
Correct.
You think?
And that's what he said. He goes, right. Listen, dude, I think the world of you. He goes, I got no problem with your religion. My only issue is radical Islam. And I go, Shil, this is the only point I want to make with you. I'm on the same side as you. We're on the same team.
Right.
Like, who would be more upset than me at ISIS? Right. They're making all Muslims look bad. They actually kill the majority of Muslims.
No one is supporting radical Islam, right?
Correct.
At least what I know.
And he said, he goes, listen, I get it, man. He goes, you're just like, he goes, I work with a lot of veterans. And he goes, you're like those anti-war veterans. They know the damage that war causes. That's why they're so against it. So he's really apologetic. We didn't do a fight. Okay, it's done. A month later, he happens to send me a text, and it's like sending directions to his house. And at this point, I wouldn't say I'm embittered, but I'm like, whatever. We're over it. I'm doing college football. He'll do his thing.
Right.
And I was like, what is this? Are you at a house party? And later on, he texts back. He's like, oh, it's just, you know, directions to this idiot's house. And the next couple hours or so, he sends me a video message. And it's him, like, outside. And I'm telling you, he was so sincere and so authentic in his apology. He was like, hey, dude. He's like, I haven't seen you. I didn't realize you were going to college football. I wouldn't see you. But I just want to say I'm so sorry. I hope our relationship didn't take too much of a beating because you know I think the world of you. And if I did anything to offend you or upset you or your family, like, I'm so sorry. And, you know, I hope we can move through this. And I'm like, you know what? A lot of people, Rich, would apologize maybe once.
Right.
You know, fingers crossed to get through it. But when you see someone's face, how contrite he was, I'm like, we're done. Like, I'm a forgiving person. I make mistakes all the time. Like, we're good. So people want to judge Kurt Schilling and say, you know what? What he says about transgenders in bathrooms is upsetting to me. I get it. Because as a Muslim, I saw what he tweeted and what I saw on Facebook, and I was upset. But as a guy, I've always got along with him really well. And he doesn't walk in the green when we work together and said, hey, Give me. These are my thoughts on Prophet Muhammad. We just are talking about baseball, and he's ripping on me for whatever and being Canadian. So ultimately, I think people would be surprised, but I really enjoyed working with Kurt Schilling. I learned a ton from working with him. I'd work with him again tomorrow, and I wish him nothing but the best. And I think the company was put in a really tough position.
Right.
But I think, to your point, ESPN said, listen, man, I get First Amendment rights. You want to say what you want, but this is a private company. At the end of the day, if we tell you not to do something, you can't keep doing it.
Exactly.
All right? One or two, fine. If I sent that True Islam tweet and John Skipper says to me, hey, listen, you can't tweet about religion at all. Okay, got it. No problem.
Right. If you did it again,
right.
There's freedom of speech on your social media feed, but there is a price to pay from a private company if they disagree with what you tweeted and you are employed under them.
I'm completely convinced Bet's going to take that last part, and that's going to be the open of this podcast.
That's going to be
the
open. I don't think so. Well,
the exact in is going to be, I enjoyed working with Kurt Schilling. That's why I paused when I said it, and I gave it a little room at the brand to cut it.
Now, who knows what the tease is.
And I'll just add, by the way, Kurt wears ladies' underwear, just so you can't use that clip.
All right. Well, first of all, I appreciate you saying that. And, you know, not too long ago on Twitter, I said basically something to the effect of that he had reached out and apologized to you. And it was amazing how many people thought I was then justifying all of Schilling's beliefs.
Right.
Which is frustrating because there's a nuance. You could say that this guy, if nothing else, acknowledge that he may have been hurtful to somebody he cared about when he worked and still disagree with what his political opinions are and what he said.
Correct.
Right.
And you
if nothing else, at least in the last 10 minutes, have at least given us some context about you. I still, listen, I don't like what Schilling tweeted on any of this stuff, but at least you provided context on a one-to-one basis of how he felt about you.
Correct, and that's my view. Like I said, if somebody sees what he says and goes, I think he is a repulsive, repugnant human being, you can hold whatever belief you want, but I've actually worked with a guy, he was a teammate of mine, and like I miss working with him, and that's genuine. If you ask those guys, did he make comments that were uncomfortable at times? Absolutely.
Right.
Did he say stuff that was probably out of line? Yeah, he did.
And it's interesting because Mendoza said he was great to her
right.
and really helped her, so it wasn't like it wasn't a competitive thing with Kurt and Jessica either. He was
right.
He reached out to her when on many things, basically, in terms of her sort of progressing within baseball.
You must have met somebody before who will kind of bust your chops. But if at some point you go, hey, man, I'm just upset, and they immediately go, hey, I'm so sorry, man, I was just doing that because I like you. That's a lot like Kurt Schilling. I think if at any point I said, hey, listen, I'm uncomfortable with what you're doing, he'd go, hey, man, I'm sorry. You know, I'm just kidding around. Like, what to me was like, it's just a clubhouse. You know the way it is.
All right.
Like, no, I don't actually. I haven't been in the
clubhouse. At this point of the podcast, do you feel comfortable that you might top Onwright and Julie Stewart Binks or no?
This is the biggest thing. I was like, this is the only thing that's going to generate feedback. You have to tweet.
Right.
Adnan Verk comes clean on Kurt Schilling.
Yeah.
That's the headline.
There'll be
nobody's going to. The first 25 minutes. Are you kidding me? If Bet runs any of that,
right?
There's you have to remove put the Schilling stuff at the front and then whatever. Soltis, Hoffman,
Schilling,
later on.
Islam, David right. Scott. Those
no,
are the three.
Those,
those are the three things that really push the podcast.
Let me say something about Onwright because I love the guy. He's so funny. He's so talented.
Right, but let's. You have to feel for him because they're
no.
Those guys are. I like both those guys a lot. They're nowhere right now. And it's frustrating because they're not being seen, and it doesn't look like – first of all, I shouldn't couch this. They are not part of what the new Fox Sports 1 is becoming. So where do they fit in long term?
Well, this is the thing. First off, I want to thank Jay and Tony Collins. They were the only two of my colleagues who are friends, at least, to have at least mentioned me. So thanks a lot, Jay Williams. I actually read your book, and you still couldn't even mention it. Hey, by the way, I love working with Verk in college basketball. This guy's got like 1.5 million followers. Can you give me a shout-out?
I know. Well, although Jay Williams was fantastic.
Jay Williams is like Oprah, though.
And great
he's trying to change the world.
Yeah, but very and also very cool about talking honestly about Carissa, which you never hear people in the business
talking. In all honesty, he was so honest. And that's the thing. He's an open book. We did Mike and Mike talk about his book. He's talking about drug addiction, all that stuff in the book. It's actually a great read. You should read it.
Was that segment sort of done so you could get to the market the next basically ESPN show? Because that's essentially Mike and Mike. All
but
right,
what Onwright said, though, to me, when he was on your podcast, he said something, I hope you get my buddy Adnan Verk. That was at the hour 10 mark, by the way. So I've got to eclipse Onwright. I've already beaten him because I mentioned it earlier than him.
Right.
And you said, yeah, I can't believe they can't ever let him go. And he goes, let him go, even give him a chance. And that's the biggest thing people don't realize. When I came to ESPN, people go, oh, my God, you're probably like some big shot at TSN. I'm like, are you kidding? Like, ask Jay. I worked at The Score. Like, that's a small number three network behind TSN and Rogers Sportsnet. I then worked at Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, as you said in that glowing introduction, which was drawing flies. Jay was a rock star. Like,
oh, yeah.
Jay and Dan were Keith
Steven,
Olbermann.
Stephen Harper was tweeting about them, the head of Canada, right?
Like, they were Olbermann and Patrick. Like, they were unbelievable stars. So when they came here, I'm like, oh, my God, this could revolutionize things because they were huge in Toronto. And I don't know what's happened at Fox. I don't know what the direction has been. Like, I'll talk with Jay here and there about it. But it's got to be frustrating because you were top of the mountain. And I don't think they regret it because they want to take that chance.
No, they don't regret
it.
I mean, listen, money was great. You can't turn it down. You're in LA. By the way, who are the new Jay and Dan? Is it Dukuchin and Bearness or not?
I can't even
pronounce their name. You're Canadian. Tell me how I pronounce their name.
Darren Dutition and Kate Burness. But Dutchie.
Darren Dutition.
Right, Dutition. But he goes by Dutchie.
And Kate Burness.
And Kate Burness.
But they're not as big as Jay and Dan, right?
No.
Right.
And I love Dutchie. He's one of my guys who was so supportive of
So
me.
Nobody has really followed, like, there's no...
Not to Jay and Dan.
There's no highlight team that's the Jay and Dan, right?
No, I mean, I started at TSN. I was an editorial assistant. In America, we call it a production assistant. You're making $150 a shift. That's what I was doing from 98 to 2002.
Canadian, too.
By the way, yeah. And I don't think that salary has increased. It may have decreased. It's now $100 a shift.
Right.
And they give you some Tim Hortons. But, like, I got friends at TSN. My buddy Gurdeep Alawalia, he's great. My friend Sean Cameron, one of my best friends, was a producer there. And they were like, listen, Jay and Dan, and let me tell you something. I don't think management realized what they had either. Okay,
oh,
that's
no chance.
Yeah, another example where you go, all right, do what you got to do. Whatever the shtick is,
right.
And then it explodes, and management goes, "Yep, we knew all along. These guys were going to be social media superstars."
Why didn't they take them though? Why didn't they keep them? If you're TSN, don't you got to try to keep those guys?
Or was it just that
they had this shot at Fox? Brand new network, they're getting wooed, they can't turn it down.
I think
Hollywood,
so. I think it was the latter. Because I think TSN would have done everything to keep him. Like,
right.
Mega stars.
Did you work with Renee Young at all at The Score?
You know what? No.
Podcast guy. Another Canadian.
I don't know this Renee Young. I know Renee Paquette.
Paquette.
I don't know who this Renee Young
is. Oh, by the way, I'm sorry. I could be wrong on this. That's, so that's Julie Stewart Binks.
JSB.
Onwright, McKenzie, and Renee Paquette. So
I'm the fifth Canadian.
I forgot about Renee Young.
And when you first launched this podcast,
right.
I emailed you early on after Van Pelt,
right.
And you said, I have the email.
I said, you got great clubs in the bag like Tirico, and you're going to have a big career.
You said, if I'm still on in October, I'll have you on. It is currently May, Rich.
Wow.
You are not a man of your word.
That's terrible. There's also somebody else out there I've said who's going to be, I'm not going to mention the person.
Come on, tell me who it is. Is it Max Bredos?
No.
You've got to get Max on. I love Max.
I like Max.
He's so funny.
But here's the deal. If
he
I have
was
Max,
so offended by you because you criticized
what
him.
What did I do?
Like 3 years ago, you said that he was so annoying on Fox.
He was hard. He was. But I like him now.
But now you said he's most improved.
Not only that.
He's so funny.
He's good. Not only that,
he's
who defends suspended him with the absurd suspension.
Yes, too many days. Yeah, that was.
You can't talk about that, but that is absolutely absurd.
I like that you look out for me, by the way. You're like, you can't talk about that. I was about to launch in and just.
Yeah, no, I don't want you.
Risk recrimination.
I want you to stick with Khan and, you know, not like. You know, move down to like Adam Hirsch or some of the.
More importantly, when are you going to move to Canada? Because you tweeted the other day, "Hello Canada,"
right after
Trump got the nomination.
It's not inconceivable. As you know, I do McCown Show every week on Primetime Sports.
You went up to Toronto.
Went up there for a week. Loved it. The most listened to. What is it, Bob? Say the most listened to Canadian talk presentation. I believe is what he said.
Bobcat's unbelievable. Yeah. Who's the
legend.
American equivalent of him?
There is none.
I'm going to put on my sunglasses.
Put on the sunglasses. Yeah, I think there can't be an equivalent of him.
I'm so cantankerous because
you don't really have one sport. You know, it'd be like if Francesa or Dan Patrick went across the country. But it's not, though, because Bob goes beyond Toronto.
Correct. He has a huge reach.
So you can't say he's just like a local guy.
I've heard
stories. Is there an equivalent?
No, there isn't. Like, I've heard stories about McCown. They're like, he could show up at like 3:45. There's a 1 o'clock Jays game.
Right.
And it's like, who won the score? Jays won 8-6.
Right.
Uh-huh.
He walks in at four, and he's doing a three-hour show. I was there with him for.
How can you do that?
I was there for a week. He was unbelievable. He does not come in until late. He's not someone who preps, but he's got a brilliant ability to synthesize sort of what's gone on. He gets notes from his producer. He understands the genius of Bob McCown. He understands radio. He's not a guy who has to know who the Jays' like top prospect is,
right?
But he kind of understands radio, not kind of. He understands radio, and he listens to his guests,
right?
And he follows up great.
He's a great practitioner. Yeah. You're right. That's it.
The one thing I'd be totally honest. I don't get treated a lot like talent at SI. All right,
I can tell by sitting.
Right,
here.
Look.
Like,
at this.
Where are we?
In Toronto at Rogers, I was treated like talent. They could
Red
not
carpet,
have treated me.
Dyches here. All they hear is Sports Illustrated.
Unbelievable.
Like, oh my God, is Chris Ballard here? No, yeah, it's actually Richard Dyche. Doesn't matter.
So that
it's
was
outside.
Great. So that I'm a.
But you want to move to Canada? You love Canada.
My wife and I do love Canada, and the schools would be great for our kids. The one thing I will say about sports talk up there is, you know.
Yeah.
Longer segments, more thoughtful conversation, not as much screaming and shouting. You agree?
That's true. It's not as knee-jerk. Right. And I'm not sure why that is. I don't know.
You tell me. More civilized country?
It could be. I don't know if it's not necessarily like a Canadian temperament or it's just the fact that, you know what?
There's no anchors up there saying, I wouldn't take John Wall as my point guard because he didn't grow up with a dad. Right? As your boy Colin Cowherd did.
Yeah, my boy. Exactly. Cowherd once said to me that he thinks that I say yes to everything too much. I'm like, what do you mean?
Too many assignments?
Right. Because I remember Joe Buck one time said that. He goes, he's deathly afraid of overexposure. I'm like, yeah, but you're Joe Buck. You're calling the World Series. I'm on the baseball tonight, 1 a.m. Saturday morning.
No, you're not going.
I think it's okay if I say yes to this one.
You're not getting overexposed by being like the third host of Outside the Lines and Overman's backup.
That's what a Cowherd said. He goes, there's value in saying no.
Can I say.
How many zeros are on your contract?
Not like Cowherd's getting overexposed in the moment. So
I'd love to be overexposed.
Do you think this leads to, actually, great segue. This leads into one of my questions. Do you think you have been hurt or helped by not being a specialist? The other question that I had from people who the other question I had is that when I put out that you were going to be on the podcast is, do you feel your quote in quotes here nice guy persona has hindered you in a market filled with opinionated, polarizing analysts?
Nobody tweeted that. That's from Alan Kim. He's out here right now.
That was from Bette Marsh. No, literally, that was a question.
I'm not that nice, first of all.
Well, let's take the first one.
Sure, first
You're not
one.
A specialist. You can host multiple sports.
Right.
Right? And you can do radio, and you've done a lot of radio.
I have. I don't know anything about radio. Credit to Russillo.
Cross-platform. You've done podcasts. Have you done any play-by-play at ESPN?
A few. I did the celebrity game.
Okay, so you've even done that.
Yeah. Right. Done a few NBA games.
So you have multiple skills.
MLB games, excuse me, not basketball, but college basketball, yeah. I think what it is, Rich, is first of all, naturally, I have this restless energy about me, so I could never just do one thing. I'm telling you right now, if they offered me, this will never happen, but if I was given like a Sunday night football assignment, I'd be like, okay, what else can I do? Like I naturally have a curiosity and interest in doing other things, and I love lots of different sports. And so I don't think the company says, all right, this guy's naturally curious or versatile. They just go, oh, we have a hole to fill. Hey, Virk, are you available next Thursday to do Outside the Lines or to fill in for Olbermann? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like I grew up admiring Keith. I revered him, sports and politics. To work with his crew was such a thrill for me. And I'm just not a guy who says no. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that should be valued the fact that you want to work and have a good work ethic, and that comes from my parents who worked hard, and that, you know, middle-class liberal upbringing stays with you. Like, in my mind, I'm still the 19-year-old guy who's working as a production assistant at TSN. I'm the guy who got turned down for 6 on-air right. jobs, kids host, weatherman, et cetera. I'm the guy who got turned down by 3 agents. Like, it's a miracle.
I think a lot of people in broadcasting sort of have that. Aren't they driven
Absolutely,
by that?
Absolutely, yeah.
Maybe until you get to the Costas level or something,
no
like Al Michaels.
And I think you have that kind of level of insecurity, and I like to think in a positive manner, that restlessness, that natural inquisitiveness, that natural industriousness to say, I want to do as many different things as possible. Because when they kick me out of here one day, at least in the resume, I can say, I did all these different things at ESPN. And how cool is that? Like, I think I'm grateful that they give me so many different opportunities. I don't view it as a drawback that they say, what does Adnan Virk do? It's a little bit annoying on Twitter. I'll get a few of those. Like, what exactly does this guy do? I see him all over the place. I'm like,
that actually means you do stuff.
Right, exactly. In my head, it's quite simple, actually. Baseball tonight in the summer, college football in the fall, college basketball in the winter, and then I fill in on radio. Like, I actually think it's a straightforward gig.
I've said this many times that I think you are really good on radio.
Thanks,
I enjoy
man.
Hearing you. Smart opinions. You can morph from sports into pop culture. But the question did come up from a reader about, like, you're not someone who's going to drop significantly polarizing opinions. Do you feel, I think people considered you, or you were considered, it seems like, a candidate for the Russillo job.
Right.
Do you think that, I don't know if you wanted that job or not, but do you think you were hurt by the fact that you are not someone who's just going to go out, I think Bob Stoops should be fired by Oklahoma, here's why?
Yeah, probably to some level. That's probably true. Like, I think in the past, especially early on, like, I don't know anything about radio. Like, I'm so grateful to Russillo, who was so generous with his time and feedback. And, you know, Scott Mastella, Pete Genesini gave me a chance knowing that, listen, this guy, you know, really hasn't done radio. It's not in his tool belt, but he seems to be interested. And Jonathan Coachman and Dari Noka, they knew me from TV. Like, yeah, we'll give you a shot. And as you know with something, once it starts to steamroll and you get momentum, you keep going.
Right.
So Luis Cornetto's giving me shifts, and Amanda Gifford's a fan. Okay, we're filling in for Golub. Now we're filling in for Russillo. Now all of a sudden it's Mike and Mike. And you never actually entertained the fact that you'd be a radio guy. I never thought once I would do ESPN radio when I walked in there May of 2010, 6 years ago. And now I couldn't imagine not doing radio. And for me, radio has this appeal, the fact that it's extra exposure, it's a ton of fun, and it's extra money. And if ever those reasons went away, then I would just stop doing radio. But I always have categorized myself as a TV guy. I went to school for radio and television arts. I always focused on TV. I've been working on television since I was 19. I'm 37 now. It's half my career. Radio has always been a part-time gig.
Right.
So I don't.
Are you a Ryerson grad at, like, Onre?
Ryerson, me and Saunders and Onre.
Nice.
So I never viewed myself as a full-time radio guy, and I'm so flattered when people like yourself and others say, no, listen, I think your TV is good, but you're great on radio. Like, I think you're much better in that medium, because I say to myself, I'm a relative neophyte there. And as far as those jobs that came open, I remember you had your twit longer. You said me and Beatle should replace Coward. And I was like, listen.
Ooh, I like that. I don't remember that, but that sounds like a good plan.
That show would have had so much Spurs talk, dogs, pop culture, Hollywood movies, Canada. It would have been unlistenable. But Beatle and I would have had fun.
Right.
But when the Russillo job came up, it's this simple. It is literally this simple. The job comes up. I text my agent. Do I have a chance? He goes, I don't think so. I think they want, like, a former player type analyst. I'm like, okay. And then Russillo said to me, listen, I threw your name at one point, and they're like, TV guy, no chance. And my understanding, whenever I've talked to the bosses, Rich, is as simple as this. I mean, I know people were tweeting, how come you don't have your own radio show? When do you, like, would you want to do it? Of course I'd love to do my own radio show. Who wants to be a substitute teacher forever?
Right.
The answer is as simple as this. The bosses feel that I have a greater value and a greater impact on the TV side than radio. And if ever that changes, they'll let me know. But up in specifically the college football component, that's like our number two sport at the company. They're like, we're not going to take you off that to do a radio show.
When you were doing those shifts,
yeah.
Is there ever like a notice? Does management ever say, hey, we're considering you for this, or we're not considering you for this? Or are you just, hey, I'm just taking my shifts with Russillo?
I'm just taking my shifts. There was actually, I got in trouble at one point because they were like, I would just say yes to everything. We had just had our second son, Adine, and I'm like, how much extra money? Okay, great. I'll just keep taking those extra shifts. That'll pay for the Buick Enclave. All right.
Nice.
So at one point, I worked like 25 days in a row. And Russillo mentioned on the air, he's like, are you nuts? Because, like, you look kind of tired. Like, you've been working a lot? I'm like, oh, yeah. 8 to 11 Sports Center News at night, Mike and Mike in the morning, the next morning. I'm like, who knows when these opportunities are going to go away? And at that point, they're like, all right, hang on a second. This guy clearly, it's like when John Voight speaks about Pacino and Heat, when he's telling De Niro not to take the case.
Right.
And he goes, this guy's on his third marriage. What do you think that means? He likes living at home? Like, and that's what they said about me. Like, listen, he's not good at saying no. And obviously, I'm a family man. I love the kids.
Right.
But they're like, he's going to say yes to everything. So we have to say no on his behalf. So I think it became a bit of a tug of war sometimes with TV and radio. They go, listen, he's a TV anchor. He's a TV host. If he wants to do radio on the side, that's fine. But we can't burn this guy out. He can't work this many days in a row just because he wants to go and talk to Golic about what movie he saw last night. That's not the way it's going to work here.
Beck, can you imagine a life where you actually get paid extra for doing something? Like, yeah. That's what happens in TV. Adnan gets paid extra for radio shifts, and we get an attaboy. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, what do you get for the podcast? Come on.
Zero. Beth and I, let's combine our salaries. Oh, yes, zero. That's what we both get.
Do I need to talk to L. John Wertheim? Is he here? Is John here?
John, I'm not sure. I think John would be happy to pay us. I don't think he controls the, you take a vow of.
Use this platform to voice your displeasure.
Yeah. See, this is where, you know, this is where you get hurt in print versus.
But don't you, listen, in all honesty, and I know you're objective and you're honest.
Right.
Don't you think I'm, quote unquote, better at TV than radio?
No, and I'm not sure I agree. I think you're good at television, but I now that I remember tweeting that about you and Beadle, no, I think you are quick on your feet. I think you got a great voice. I think you can morph into different subjects. I think any breaking news that comes down the pike, if you were doing a shift, you can handle. That said, I think there's a real skill in being a good host, and it's always going to be more profitable and more lucrative. So, like, if I was your consigliere,
yeah, please,
I would obviously
say
I would obviously have to stick to TV.
Right.
Yeah. And you, and this guy's not going to want us to mention his name a lot, but your Ted DiBiase would say, Adnan, listen, radio's a nice little thing, but the lucrative money is in television. That's where your focus has to be.
David Lloyd once said to me, he goes, I think radio's probably more fun and more of your personality, but TV is a little more cage.
Yeah. And David Lloyd, by the way, has got a
reputation. By the way, he's calling right now. Can you believe this?
Yeah, of course.
Should I take this call?
Don't take the call. That would be amazing, though, if you took the call live on air.
He is furious right now.
Because we can't, I'm not sure we can clear him. But David Lloyd has a reputation of being a nice guy.
Terrific.
Yeah, I heard he's a really good guy. I've never talked to him.
You know, and I love.
Good rep, though.
It was so nice when you tweeted, you said that I'm underrated, because you know who is underrated?
Well, do you remember I had Adnan Virk weak because I was so pissed at the PR department for not promoting you?
Scott was appalled.
That I decided to make it Adnan Virk.
You had the Joe Carter World Series SI cover. You had the Raptors.
It was all Canadian related.
All Canadian related. And then David Lloyd got into it with you because, listen, David Lloyd was also upset, but David Scott tweeted you, goes, listen, we support him right here. And it was like a front row magazine of my Oscar predictions.
Yeah.
And you wrote back, this is laughable. Like, who's reading this?
Right. No one's reading. Like, it's like.
Who gets front row? Do you get front row? You get it sent to you.
No, I don't. You don't even get it sent to you. You get it sent, I guess, in an email form, but it's, you have to know that it exists. No offense to ESPN's PR department, but like the external world does not know about the front row site. So it's like, hey, Adnan. Like, I just landed you in the Monte Carlo Times. I'm hoping somebody from Connecticut checks it out. Like,
because my dad's like, wait, you have your Oscar previews on ESPN.com? I'm like, no, it's actually.
Let's get Adnan like a full-page profile in the Washington Post like Bayless did. Like, that's publicity, right?
Right. And the thing is, after you and David Scott went back and forth, he emailed me and goes, hey,
by the way, nobody asked me to do this podcast with you. Me and you did it, right? I didn't get an apartment saying, hey, Adnan would be a great guest. That said, I want to say for the record, ESPN has been excellent in terms of letting ESPNers come on here. But every person in talent wants to do it because they don't get an opportunity to talk for an hour about what they do and why they do it.
And that's the thing. I thought to myself, do I have to notify anybody that I'm doing this?
Did you? I probably should have.
I didn't, but I got lots of people afterwards. I was like, oh, I'm going on Dice's podcast. Like, wary.
You alerted someone in PR, so I feel like that's enough.
Yeah. I guess that's true.
It's always better to ask for forgiveness, right, than for permission.
That's my view, right? Just do it afterwards. I had no idea. I couldn't divulge
kind of
the secrets.
That's kind of an SI.
John Skipper wants to speak with me Monday morning?
Nah,
oh, my God.
John Skipper will be. First of all, John Skipper, I'm sure he's not listening.
But I'll say this, though. I asked somebody. They said, well, the suits may not listen, but there's people on their behalf who are listening.
Of course. There are, if John Skipper is sort of Jon Snow, there are people at the wall listening. And it's not a really
your
good analogy.
Your love of Game Thrones.
Because John Skipper is not Jon Snow at all. The NBA playoffs are heating up, and here at the SI Podcast Network, we give hoop fans two great shows in one. On Open Floor, you'll hear Lee Jenkins interview the most interesting personalities in basketball. And in addition, Andrew Sharp and Ben Golliver sit down once a week to break down the best storylines of the playoffs. That's Open Floor, SI's NBA podcast. You can find it on iTunes, Google Play Music, or at si.com/podcasts. All right, I won't keep you for much longer.
No, please. I was just looking at my phone because I have an attachment to it.
All right, so let's.
I want to go longer than Onright. He went hour 10.
You,
Doc Emrick was on. Oh, bro, dang!
Yeah, that's good. The
Peter Skoutra!
Let's talk about how ESPN first learned of you, because the one thing I do know about your interview, you drove 10 hours from Toronto to Bristol for the interview.
You're like
right?
James Lipton now. Like, right. You're just
I know that about
this
you.
This is inside the actor's studio
material. So at a certain point,
Richard, what is your favorite word?
After it got down to, like, you know, 50, 10, 5, whatever you were a finalist, you drove, like, a massive amount to You drove a long way for that interview. So how did it? How did ESPN sort of find you? And then what was the process like for you to get hired?
All right, I'll tell it quick, but only on the condition that you do. We do the Lipton quiz afterwards.
I don't even know what the Lipton
quiz
is.
Okay, great. Okay, so bet he's going to do it. So basically, my agent, Mark Turner, at the time had emailed.
Who was your agent at the time?
Mark Turner.
I don't even know who that is. Is that a Canadian guy?
No, he's an American guy. I'm trying to give him some pub. Right. So he had emailed Laurier, Landon, and Talent Office. Hey, I got this guy. Here's his tape. They take a look at it. All right. And Laurier had said, listen, I don't have any openings, but I'd love to meet him. So I get in the car. It was me and my wife, Eamon. Yusuf at the time was a couple years old. I'd never called in sick before. God, I felt guilty. And somebody said to me, they go, if you ever do it, just say you threw it your back. So it was Canadian Thanksgiving, and I go, guys, I threw up my back. And thankfully, we weren't on the air. It was just rehearsals. So I'm like, oh, that's not too bad. We're rehearsing a morning show, which was short-lived. So I drive down the 10 hours. We stay the night. Next morning, I meet with Lori, and she's great. She goes, oh, I know what the score is. I know your work. I thought it was fun. Inventive. You obviously have a good presence. I'm like, great. Good conversation.
Fantastic.
And I meet with Dave Roberts, who's actually running ESPN News at the time. We have a nice conversation. And then we get right back in the car and drive back. And on the way back, my agent calls me, and he goes, oh, my God. He goes, bro. Laurier Orlando said, if I had an opening, I'd hire him tomorrow. I'm like, are you kidding?
Great.
I was like, here we go. That was October of 2008. And I don't hear anything for months. And David Amber, who was the secret weapon, he was my inside man.
Right.
He was so great when I actually went to the interviews and say, okay, say this, talk to this person. This guy likes this sport. He's a fan of this, et cetera. Avoid this topic. He was like, he would send me memos. Oh, Steve Weiss from Max Brothers just got hired. I'm like, hang on a second. Wait, whoa. I was told that I'd be the next guy. I don't get this. And then Deuces Rogers got hired, who's great. I mean, obviously, these guys were all worthy of being hired. I was just upset why I wasn't in the mix. So this is a good lesson for people listening who are trying to get the biz. There's a fine line between being persistent and being a pain in the you-know-what, and right. Only you know that fine line. So it was a matter of just kind of keep every month, hey, Lori, here's some new stuff I did. Hey, just checking in. Hey, I saw the home run derby. Man, Boomer was great on that back call. And then it got to, like, New Year's Day of 2010. This has been 15 months since I interviewed. At this point, I'm like, oh, what the hell? Like, I don't even – I just go, hey.
Where are you now? I'm at
MLS
Maple Leaf
Maple Leaf Sports Center. Right. So I just literally go, hey, happy new year. Hope all's well. Whatever. And she writes back, hey, I've got an opening. Do you have a new tape? And I'm like, oh, my God, yes. So I immediately got the tape together, threw it in there, and then I went for a proper audition. It was the day after Valentine's Day. I had to go. I was covering the All-Star game because it was Bosch and the Raptors.
Right.
And it's a big deal, man. Like, you're meeting with all these heavyweights, and I'm nervous the night before. You're terrified. You get an audition out there, 10 minutes. Like, it's about as nerve-wracking as it gets. And then I didn't hear about it for a week, and then I ended up getting a call from my agent saying, yeah, ESPN got you the job, and you're like, oh, my God. Like,
wow.
It's when people say, you don't even imagine reaching that
pinnacle. What was the audition? What'd they have you do?
It was 10 minutes of highlights, and Amber was great. He goes, listen, make sure you watch sports until the night before, so you'll know the exact highlight. You'll know if it's Kemba Walker, you'll know who the next play is. Like, they'll tell you can watch it, but you'll have already seen it. You can already think about, what's my intro going to be? All right, Calhoun, I got this thing. And he goes, and even if you say, hey, listen, I know that the package last night in SportsCenter, the Eagles highlight was in the B's, but I actually am a big Eagles fan. I want to lead with, yeah, all right, great. I have an intro I want to write about, maybe Ray Rhodes at the time or whoever it was, Rich Cotite. So the fact that I knew that, I'm like, I already felt so prepped going into it. I'd already seen the highlights. And in fact, in the audition, at one point, the tape froze. And I thought they were doing it on purpose.
They're
trying to screw me. And I said something like, oh, take a picture, it'll last longer. Look at that, frozen in time. And the director's like, no, stop down. That was just a mistake. That wasn't us. I'm like, oh, I know, you sneaky guys. But yeah, and the biggest question that they had for me was, Canadian guy, do you really understand college sports? Do you know what the SEC is? Are you aware of the Pac-10? Like that, they could get the fact that pro sports, yeah, okay, Toronto, you probably know the Jays, Raptors, okay, you understand NBA, basketball, football, so pervasive. But do you understand college sports? And that's probably the craziest thing. You look at my career now, you go, how in the hell, after 6 years, is this Canadian
guy,
one of the primary hosts on
and
college football?
And Amber's back in Toronto now, right?
Yeah, Amber's the best. He's working at Sportsnet right now.
That's cool. That was cool. He did it real solid for you.
Dude, he was awesome. Yeah. Like, you have to have people like that. You've got to have guys like David Amber to get
Canadian.
You to those dreams.
Every Canadian is good. I have found, generally speaking, the Canadians that come to the States are nowhere near as competitive as American media talent. Do you think that's fair, or is that a generalization?
Maybe a generalization.
All right, so
we're nice and friendly and everything, but
behind the scenes, you're cutthroat, sharking off.
Can I tell the story when I almost got deported from ESPN?
Yeah, I'd love to hear that. I love the deportation stories.
3 years ago,
it seems very apropos with Donald Trump as the Republican nominee.
Almost got deported for being Canadian, and now for being Muslim.
Right.
So 3 years ago. Mark Gross calls me up. He's our senior vice president. He's got along pretty well. And I actually had a meeting with him set up for the next day. And I meet with him normally once a year. And I was so shocked. He calls me and goes, listen, I got to meet with you right now. And I'm at the ESPN gym. And I'm like, okay, like, are we meeting tomorrow? He's like, it's like right now. Like, just like, how quick can you get here? I'm like, 20 minutes? My heart's in my throat.
Of course. You never want that call from your boss.
I go, who went into my hard drive? Who is downloading illicit material? It was not me.
Right.
I walk in, and my first thought was, if I see somebody, if I see like a cop or like HR, mm-hmm. I'm just going to run. Because they can't fire you unless you sign the document. Right. I've been fired before. I was fired as a movie usher. I know how this works. I'm like, no, I'll just run. You can't catch me. I'll go for the hills. And I don't know what will happen after that. I walk in. Grossi gets up, closes the door. He goes, we got to talk. I go, what happened? Like, whatever. It's not true. He goes, we got to send you back. I go, what? He goes, send you back to Canada. I go, are you kidding right now? He goes, your visa expired. It's an O-1 visa. I got a call from the people. Your visa's expired. I go, you're serious right now? He's like, yeah. And I go, so what? He goes, you have to work baseball tonight, and then tomorrow morning, you've got to go home and your family too. The Russillo's favorite part of that is the fact that they said, you have to work tonight. Like, you can just leave right now. Like, finish the baseball tonight, midnight on E2. And then first thing in the morning, I go, hang on a second. My wife and kids are American. Like, what, where would they go anywhere? He's like, okay, fair point. You have to go there. Your wife and kids have to stay. And I'm like, I'm baffled by this. He goes, can I just, one question? Sure. I go, I signed a 2-2. That's called a 2-year deal with a 2-year option, and they hold the option. It's a 4-year contract. We're in year 3. Why would you give me a 3-year O-1 visa and a 4-year contract? So that's a great question. I don't have the right answer for it. We'd have to check with the legal department. I go, are you serious? I go, how long is this going to take to get rectified? He goes, at least a couple of months. I go, are you serious? He goes, it could be 3 months. I said, I've been begging Mike McQuaid to get on baseball tonight. These events that Steve Berthume happened to become the voice of the Diamondbacks, like, this is gold in my lap, and I finally get this chance as a lifelong baseball guy to work on baseball tonight, and you're going to send me home because of a visa for 3 months, maybe 6 months? Now, maybe you can do some stuff on TSN. I don't want to be on TSN. I want to work here at ESPN. What are you talking about? And I sat there, and I go, hang on a second. I go, I might have the answer here. He goes, you do? And I'm like, I met with a lawyer on my own a couple weeks ago. I guess this is irrelevant because what you're telling me. But because my wife's American, I kind of took this upon myself. And I filled out some paperwork, and I think I'm okay. Like, I think I have a card at home that says I'm all right, but I'm guessing you know more than I do. He goes, well, I don't know about any of this stuff. Like, what do you have at home? And I go, listen, I hired a lawyer. I paid my own money. I think it's called a green card. Like, it's green at the top, but I don't know if that's the technical term. He goes, all right, I go, listen, let me run home, check the lawyer, I'll figure it out. I go home, I not only have, there's like a purple card that says something like temporary assistance, but I have the actual green card, permanent resident.
Right.
Call the lawyer, I'm like, hey, I'm okay, right? They can't get rid of me. He's like, no, what are you talking about? You're totally fine. You're good for like 10 years. You're good. I race back, I show Mark Gross, I'm like, he's like, oh, thank God, right? We're all good. He goes, by the way, you got to hear this message. I'm like, what? He goes, from the worst person in legal. That's like, hi, Mark, we regret to inform you that Mr. Burke's visa has expired. We're going to have to ship him back. He goes, ship him back?
Like your cargo.
get him back across the border.
Oh, my Lord.
Almost departed.
Yeah.
Mike McQuaid's favorite part of that story, he's the VP now at SportsCenter, he used to run baseball tonight, is he said they had a conference call, and at one point somebody goes, just thinking out loud here, but can he do baseball tonight from Toronto? And Mike was on speaker, and picks it up, and he goes, just thinking out loud, no, he can't. The 5-second delay. What do you think about the White Sox? Pause.
My sense is that it was Kevin Connors behind all this. He was just basically trying to get more reps.
Kevin Connors, one of the nicest guys in the business. Like, so I love that David Lloyd and Kevin Connors have more shout-outs than everybody.
No, I know. Yeah, Kevin Connors actually is a good guy.
Connors is awesome.
All right, listen, this is what we'll finish up. First of all, I'll ask this because, you know, there are young broadcasters listening. How important is it for young broadcasters to get representation? Because the more I cover this business, the more I realize that it's very hard to get these premium jobs unless you have a well-connected agent. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I know. Amber told me years ago, he goes, it's a necessary evil in the States.
Yeah.
And in Canada, I never had an agent. Anthony Ciccone, my old boss at The Score, who was so great to me, he said to me one time, he goes, if you ever get an agent, I swear to God, if you walk in here with that agent, I will fire you. Like, immediately.
Really?
I will throw you out of this room. In Canada, it never happened. You just send a tape. They like the tape. You come on in. You meet the person. All right, Mr. Deitch, good to have you.
Right.
Here we go. In America, you can't do that. You can't just walk into a building and just go, here's my tape. They go, who are you exactly? Who are you represented by? And so that was something different for me, that I had to send my tape to agents and just
so it's
them.
Almost you have to pitch yourself to the agents.
Correct.
And then the agents pitch you to them.
So no question.
It's such a weird process, right?
Absolutely. Because you think of any other job, you just walk in,
right,
here's my resume, handshake and a smile, Willie Loman style, we're good to go.
But I think Amber's right. Like, it depends on what your deal is, how much percentage
you're
paying.
I'm getting 60%.
60%. That's a fascinating deal.
It's more than the Colonel and Elvis. Right. 50-50.
But you really, I mean, again, the more I write and report about this business, it's almost unheard of for somebody to walk into an ESPN or an FS1 or an NBC, et cetera, without being rep by a fairly big place.
Yeah, you can't do it, man. And I'm telling you, once you have a big-time agent—
But like then I it do, changes the world.
He's the best. Are you kidding me? He emailed you after that whole exchange you do in David Scott, and he told you, like, listen, I got Adnan. He's getting taken care of, all right?
Right.
Skip Bayless money, $4 million signing bonus. It's coming. When I get that Skip Bayless contract,
right.
You, me, Bette Marsden,
do you
Alan
like
Kim,
the fact that you
going on the yacht, going to be Wolf of Wall Street style.
Do you like the fact that you share an agent with Skip Bayless?
I never bring it up to him. The only thing, because I'm a big Oberman guy, I'll bring up Keith to Nick all the time, but I don't mention too many other clients.
Yeah, although I think
Brian Kenny I love.
Right, okay. The NFL draft was huge for us at Sports Illustrated, and we have three big shows analyzing the aftermath. First, On the Clock with Chris Burke, who has painstakingly tracked the draft all season long for us. Then there's the MMQB. That is a total wrap-up podcast of the draft. And finally, Draft Season, SI's NFL Draft miniseries, which is even more fascinating with the context of a completed draft. So that's On the Clock, the MMQB podcast, and Draft Season. Find them on iTunes, Stitcher, and now at Google Play Music. All right. Lastly, you said you either had questions for me or do you want to talk about Canel? Because I don't need to talk about
Canel. Canel. Right.
My only last interaction with Canel was... I don't interact with him a lot, but he took a dump on soccer fans
yes.
after... Leicester City's historic win. I mean, that truly is professional trolling. One of the greatest sports stories in the last 100 years.
5,000 to 1 underdogs.
Right. And Canel, of course, because he's got to go Bayless light, takes a run at soccer fans.
Brett Oss was upset because immediately I texted Max and Chris and all the soccer guys. They're like, why would he do that?
Yeah, but you guys are not allowed to publicly be upset, right? Publicly, Brett is like, way to go, Dano, or whatever.
Dano. Canel's whole point is this, because I was like, listen, man, because he might take a shot at you once in a while.
Right.
As tough as that is to believe. And I'm like, listen, Dykes is my guy. He goes, you know what?
I like the fact that Canel takes a shot at me. That's a badge of honor.
But he goes, listen, New York liberal. Of course he likes you and right. Jemele Hill and Jess Mendoza and Sarah Spain. Like, oh, minorities and women. That's Dykes' wheelhouse.
Isn't Sarah Spain a Midwestern white woman?
Right, but he'll go female. He'll go, no matter what.
Tell Canel I voted for one of the Bushes. I'm not going to tell you which one, but I did vote for one.
Did you vote for
yeah,
W?
I did. I'm not saying, but I voted for one.
God.
All right, so listen, what
that's
do we
his issue. He feels that you're too much of a liberal.
Too much of a liberal, right.
Too much women and minorities in right. your own agenda all the time.
So Leicester City is a liberal soccer club, right? Congrats, Danny. That's the first I've ever heard of that.
Bunch of socialists out there.
Yeah, bunch of socialists. Yeah, that, and I understand Canel could be a little mad at me because I have taken his war on football thing and like, admittedly, sarcastically,
a couple
times.
That's what he said. He goes, you know why this thing blew up? It was because of Deitch.
No, that's not true. It didn't blow up because of me, but a couple of times when he's been ridiculous, I have said, despite the war on football, you know, NBC drew 24 million people for its NFL game yesterday.
You also said he just didn't leave fitting a bottle of wine.
Like, what did I say that? Oh, that might have been me just saying, thank God you have been gifted this incredible job. I actually don't think Dan... I
on the air with me and Galloway, he's good.
Yeah, I think...
Right?
He's not what he is on Twitter. I agree with you.
Correct, because right? he's measured, he's smart,
right.
he knows
why
his
is that? So who's the real Danny?
I think that he's, you know, he's got kind of two sides of the same coin. You know what I mean? Like, he likes to kind of just
poke and
provocative, but he actually does really know his stuff.
Right.
It's kind of like, I don't know.
He was he was the leader of the FSU bandwagon when they were rolling, right?
Oh, but there's no doubt about that. What do you think about him and Russillo together? Because Russillo's phenomenal.
He's
angry. He's cynical.
No, I agree. I don't honestly listen to the show as much as I did when Scott was on. I've always liked Russillo. I liked him before he got to ESPN.
Analytical, measured, thoughtful.
When he was in Boston, I listened to him and I thought he was good.
Right.
I think he's smart. Yeah, I think he's sort of smart and can be dark and cynical and
definitely dark, brooding,
and has a lot of good qualities of a radio person.
He really understands the industry.
I don't know. I don't know if I have a feeling about he and Canel. I don't know.
You haven't listened
Yeah, I haven't listened enough, so I don't want to say it's not going to work long term. I would say this about ESPN Radio and, you know, Trug Keller and the rest of the boys up
there. Trug, by the way, good interview with
like
you.
Like Trug, yeah.
Yeah,
a lot.
Really nice guy.
But I think, you know, it's a tough thing to try to win in big local markets like mine in New York and Philly. You can't. I mean, ESPN Radio has no standing here. Zero. I sound like Francesa.
You know? Huge.
You're you, and I'm Gordie Howe.
Are you going to take a Rick DiPietro, too?
You're you, and I'm Gordie Howe.
But
you're not based in New York, I am. But like literally, that lineup from 6 to 3 is nowhere. There's no impact.
Mike and Mike,
nothing. It gets blown out by Boomer and Carton and every other radio station. It's 15th in the market.
Right. It's tough.
Levitard not even on in the market. I'm not even sure maybe Russillo and Canel have maybe an hour or so, but you know, eventually Michael Kay comes on against Francesa. And I like Michael Kay. He's a pretty good host, but
very
he can't
good.
Be Francesa. But yeah, so it's fascinating. And this is the same kind of deal in Philly, Boston. You go to major markets. I don't know. I should know the Chicago market a little better. But major they're not bad in Chicago. Blah, blah. But major Eastern markets in particular, ESPN gets crunched nationally against local. I think it's just very hard to beat local.
I think that's true because that medium particularly, people want to know, hey, Yankees, right. Mets, Rangers, whatever it is.
Right.
It's tough to appeal to all those bases. But I'll give love to Mike and Mike, man. Those guys are Hall of Famers. They just got inducted in the Hall of Fame.
I think that Mike and Mike probably get more
grief
than they should. I agree.
That's
I think it's an amazing skill to have been on the air for as long as they have. I actually think Mike Greenberg is a good broadcaster.
Really smart guy.
And I kind of...
A little glib.
Well, I don't want to put you under the management bubble here, but I feel Mike... This is, again, my words. If Marsh Keegan and Chuck Keller are listening, my words. I think Greenberg was screwed by the fact that they screwed around with that show. They're supposed to go to New York. It didn't. They've now clearly made the show a television show more than a radio show. It's clearly done to market what's coming next, like First Take, et cetera.
Talked about Mike and Mike being more of a TV show now.
Yeah, I believe, and this is anecdotally from those who follow me on Twitter, but it's almost 100%. People now, when they hear that show, they feel they're listening to a television show that's simulcast on radio as opposed to a radio show that's simulcast on TV. Whether that's good or bad, it's
because the TV numbers are up.
Exactly. So that, in the end, is what ESPN wanted. But I think it's hurt the radio broadcast. The one criticism of Mike and Mike, and I think it's fair, is that they've always been, generally speaking, soft on your rights holder figures, Roger Goodell's, et cetera. But the show at least acknowledges that we're not trying to be 60 Minutes or OTL.
That's my
view. We are what we are. And so correct. I think that's fair.
I think if you're
Is Simmons taking cracks at him all the time? He loves that.
It helps him to do so, right?
Yeah, you got
take
it.
Shots at the big boys.
You
to
always,
be with,
always.
If I was Billy,
wrestling,
I'd be doing the
same wrestling thing. Teaches you that you always go after the authority.
Why did you call me once the Daniel Bryan of ESPN? I don't know enough about wrestling except for the
I'll tell you this.
The Bella Twins.
We're going so long here at this point. It's almost like Heyman.
She's cut half of this thing out.
I called you the Daniel Bryan of ESPN because Daniel Bryan was someone, when he was brought to WWE, was not expected to be a major star. He didn't have the build and the steroid or the muscle build like a lot of these guys.
I have hired a trainer.
Through the sheer force of his personality, likability, won the crowd, and eventually convinced the WWE bosses like Vince McMahon to make him a main carder. So he was brought in essentially as a mid-card guy. Right. By the way, your boy Nick Khan, your agent loves talking about mid-card guys versus main card guys. Bring that up to him.
Well, I asked him.
So Daniel Bryan was a mid-carder who's developed into a main card guy. Like, I feel like you're a main card guy now, but at a certain point, the ESPN apparatus was seeing you as a mid-carder. So I like the fact that you moved up.
I think
that's why you're Daniel Bryan.
I think
now Daniel Bryan just retired, so I hope that doesn't happen to you. But that's the analogy.
But you tweeted that, and everyone just kept putting yes, yes, yes.
Right.
And I'm like, what?
But that's his chant. Do you know that? That's
the
Daniel Bryan.
I thought it was Ben Kingsley in the movie Sexy Beast. You remember the one scene? He goes,
yes,
exactly. And I go, what does this have to do with?
Doesn't Ben Kingsley in that movie say something like, "I'm a very good listener"? I love that's really one of the great.
Him and Ray Winstone are incredible in that film.
Right. How does Ray Winstone get the tan that he gets in that film? It's incredible.
His name is Gal. Remember?
His name is Gal. Gal, and I love the pool.
His dirty wife.
Yeah, it's, right.
Dirty
right.
Diane.
Dirty
Deirdre. Whatever. Dirty Deirdre. Right, right.
But the
pool is great.
Well, he's the thing about Winston is he's
yellow Speedo.
Right. He's a former bank robber, but he's lived in Spain and he's lived a good life.
And he's soft now.
He's got the red.
Yeah, he looks in the mirror. And goes, I'm beautiful. Yeah,
but he's not. Winston, fantastic. But Ben Kingsley's amazing in that.
Oh my God.
As is Ian McShane.
Oh, Ian McShane. Yeah.
If you guys have never seen Sexy Beast,
oh, go watch it right now.
Unreal.
Last thing I'm going to do, I'm going to give you the Lipton quiz.
All right, this will be it. We're going to finish up because we're at like 120.
What is your favorite word? It's supposed to go quicker than this.
What is my favorite
word? Cut up the dead air.
Is it weird to say I don't have one? I love words so much. I don't know if I have a perfect one.
This is atrocious.
Pick
one.
Love.
Love. Okay. What is
a lame answer. It's probably not true.
What is your least favorite word?
This Lipton quiz sucks. What is my least favorite word? Maybe separate, because it's hard to spell.
Okay. What job would you most like to have other than your own?
I would love to have a national radio show in Canada.
That's big. That can be arranged. What job would you least like to have?
In media or just anywhere?
Anywhere.
I would not like to be a coder. I'm just not very – that seems like a tough job for me. Bet, would you agree?
Yeah.
I'd be bad at that. Oh, no, but that's probably not the worst because actually that's not – so let me think of something that would be really worse.
Professional movers tough.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those guys are incredible.
Stuff.
I'm just trying to think. You know what? I think it would be maybe to like do the like the washing of like skyscrapers would be.
Oh, rough. Yeah, that's horrifying.
I think that would be it. That seems really hard.
What is your favorite curse word?
I think motherfucker is my favorite curse word, which we're allowed to curse on this show.
I remember Joe Buck cursed right out of the gate. I couldn't believe
literally
Joe
90
cursed.
People like contacted me said that was fantastic, and then one guy's like, "I'm never listening to this podcast again. How dare you ask Joe Buck to curse?"
He's got his new book coming out, by the way.
I know, which I think could be good because I think he's going to talk a lot about the perception of Joe Buck versus reality because you know everybody thinks he's smug and elite. It's not really the case, though.
No, he's a funny guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
And last one, if heaven exists, what do you want God to say to you at the pearly gates?
I appreciate the effort.
Likewise, man.
Listen, Adnan, is there anything? Is that what Lipton asks all the time?
Yeah, those at the end of the he always asks those ones. So Pacino, when he asks, he goes, "What do you most love?" He goes, "What turns you on?" That's all. What turns you on?
Do you think it has your
Pacino
love...
goes everything?
Yeah, of course. Because they're all acting.
Philip Seymour Hoffman said, "What job does he not want? Film critic. He hates to be because I
that's
hate
weird
to be a film
too,
critic.
Because you think,
I'd love to be a film critic."
Has the movie stuff helped you at ESPN or hurt you or non factor? Because sort of known as the movie guy at ESPN.
Yeah, I think it's helped me. And you know what? I've always been a cinephile, movie buff, movie geek. I'm wearing my Tribeca Film Festival shirt here.
Yeah, it's impressive.
Last time I was in New York, I went to the 40th anniversary of Taxi Driver. I got to meet Paul Schrader outside, the legendary screenwriter.
Yeah,
he was amazing. So I think it's actually helped me, especially with the radio. Like, I'll go on there, and we're talking about some nonsensical NFL story. People go, "Hey, has Adnan seen, you know, Civil War yet?" Like, they just want to talk movies. So as a Rosillo, actually, again, was great. He was like, no matter what, every time Adnan's on, we got to talk movies at least one second because people want to hear it.
Should I give a shout-out to Matthew Berry, who probably could be used more?
Yeah, you know, and he's a good dude,
yeah,
man.
You can make the argument that, like...
Underutilized.
Underutilized as a fantasy player and a guy who actually can make the company money because fantasy is a moneymaker.
I'm thinking about doing a movie podcast if ESPN would let me to do it.
He would love that. He's, as you know, former screenwriter.
Wrote
Crocodile Dundee 2.
Yes. Three.
And or whatever it is. And he's been on The Stern Show many times.
Right.
Talks about movies. He
used to write for Married with Children. Has great Ed O'Neill stories.
He would be great on that show. Anyone else? Beetle? Or no?
I think if it was me, Beetle, and Barry, somebody tweeted that to you. Because how about
why don't
three
you guys do... I mean, in all honesty, as you know, they've given everyone a podcast at that network. Abby Wambach walked in the door and has her own podcast already. So why can't
But that's my point. Is it oversaturated? There's no money in it.
No, because you three have... name recognition, so I think you'd get listening right away.
Right.
And if it's something you enjoyed, I think you should do it. But like the great thing about your network, and this is where Bette and I would be very jealous, you have the distribution engine where you could put that thing out and get it to hundreds of thousands of people like that. Potentially,
really?
You can get an audience. I'm not saying you would get that, but
right.
the
you
potential,
could.
You know, Trog Keller and the rest of the guys running the,
Pete Genesini runs the podcast division.
Oh, is that right?
Right. So
I was trying to think of a China Syndrome reference. Like, what is that like edifice there? But yeah, whoever runs the podcast division, we're all jealous of because like that is the fire hose of dreams. You put a podcast out there,
right.
ESPN gets some marketing might behind you, people will listen to that. I mean, but everybody, from Carrie Champion,
right?
My buddy Carrie.
Yeah, you gave love to Carrie Champion's like Carrie, podcast.
To Jamel and Michael, to Abby Wambach, to... Kate Fagan and the
Brett rest has one.
Yeah, yeah. Kate Fagan and the rest of the
The trifecta.
Trifecta, right? Yeah. Kate has two actually. Hot Takedown, isn't that one of them? Right.
I'm unaware of that.
My
one.
Point is that like Bill Barnwell, there's
Barnwell,
a million
huge.
Of these.
Yeah.
Right. Isn't there an NHL podcast? I'm sure. Is it Melrose or
Bochy or Levy? One
Linda Cohn has a podcast.
Yeah. Linda Cohn loves the podcast.
So my point
huge
is,
in New York.
My point is that like you should do it not. Because it's a moneymaker, but
correct.
For the sake that you're going to enjoy it.
I'm with you on that.
And you know what?
There's something for the love of the game with
tell DiBiase, knowing how well connected he is, and maybe gets you a little pizza money. You know what I'm saying?
That's not a bad call.
You know?
Because he should be. You're
right. This podcast is sponsored by Harry's Razors or something.
Yeah, Harry's. By the way, can we discuss the music on this podcast?
Yeah, we'll end it on this. This is Bet. I'll give you the microphone.
It's like ocean waves. Like, who sat there and goes, you know what? This is a good Deitch podcast music. This is media music.
They handed us when we were starting podcast Deitch's. Was one of the first to launch, and so we had something like 10 options of just like random like free clips that one of the video guys sent me, and I listened through them all, and I was kind of like, all right, well, like this is the one that sucks the least, and it kind of stuck. And then even the little transition,
yeah, I love
the
that one.
Transition,
like 23
guy.
Minutes in, then he's got Harry's Razors,
yeah,
he reads that promo, that
like,
music
bumps, yeah, bumps
right,
up
Mike
the
Hill,
ads.
Here we go, more with Mike Hill.
We got to make money, you know, yeah. Coming back, whatever. Bumps into the interview, going into the outro,
right?
Even that, like I was listening to that. That came out of the whole, like the entirety of the clip. I only used the first like minute and the last minute of the clip. The clip's probably two.
All right.
Like, not that long, but I found that in there, too, so.
Well, this bet, I appreciate it in advance, because this is going to be a long one to edit.
Because you always give.
And I'm saying, I'm gonna say this. Rachel Nichols too is gonna get her own pod soon. Everybody's at your network's getting their own.
So
pod.
So you think it makes sense? Because it helps branding.
Yes,
it
helps.
You
it's
love.
Good. Yeah, I hate to Rovell it on you here, but
yeah, you are.
It's good. This is good for your personal brand. But more than that, like we talked about, this is just something you enjoy, and it will
correct.
Be an enjoyment thing. It could be.
I
like
get to go to Tribeca. I'll get free 45, tickets. The movie
right,
podcast.
45 minutes once a week. This is easy as long as you can get. Barry will definitely do it.
Yeah,
trust
right.
me. Barry,
he's a great dude.
Yeah, Barry will walk down the street and hawk his wares. Beetle could be tough because she's busy.
I'll have to finesse
a little bit of a bigger star in the system, right?
A little bit of a bigger star.
A lot bigger star.
She dwarfs me. She may not even
although Barry might not be happy to hear that because I think he fancies himself at the Beetle level. But let's be honest, Beetle's a bigger.
Matt Berry was so generous. My brother came to visit, and he's sitting. All I want to do is meet Matthew Berry, Field Yates, and Stefania Bell.
Wow.
They met him.
He's a big fantasy.
My brother loves fantasy football. Right. He sat in on the podcast. Barry talked to him for 30 minutes afterwards. Wow. He was like, oh my God. He goes, I'm not kidding.
Why? No love for Eric Carabel?
Eric Carabel did not get much love.
That's
he's
horrible.
Got four adorable kids in his city. He goes, I swear to God, Matthew, this is the highlight of my year.
That's great.
Matthew Barry, very generous.
Matthew Barry, I'm not allowed to reveal this, but if the guy tells you stories about some of the famous people he's helped, like with fantasy teams, it's amazing. But
I
don't want to reveal
it. He's a connected guy.
Yeah, he's connected. He's
more than Michael Rapaport.
Yeah, trust me. Michael Rapaport is way down the list of famous people. All right, listen. Adnan Virk has been the guest. He's the fifth Canadian who's been on this this fine podcast. He hosts Baseball Tonight. He hosts what is the exact name of the show? College Football Final or something?
You know, that's the thing. It's college football, but we're just doing halftime and updates of the games.
So
and
it does not have a name?
College Football Final is the show that's after all of the games with Tessitore and Galloway.
So what do you call yours?
I guess
anything?
College Football Studio Host.
All right, College Football Studio Host.
Right.
You do Baseball Tonight. You occasionally still do ESPN Radio. Is there anything else that you're doing at the moment? The Overman Show has been canceled, I believe,
so you're not doing that. I honestly, you know, people talk about passion projects. Right. I thought.
And there's no show like that anymore at ESPN.
There was no show I loved doing. It was like a one-man Broadway show.
I know.
You go in there and you write a six-minute commentary. You got Collette, JB, Cerosi, right. Great guys.
No doubt Pablo Torre was trying to cut your
absolutely.
Head off to be
I
the
said
number
Pablo,
two guy.
And that's why. Right. Keith was like, no, Adnan's the primary
Adnan's
filler.
Too, right.
Right.
Yeah,
Pablo,
exactly.
you're in the mix. Pablo was great. Pablo was one of the more intelligent guys you'll meet.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
But the Daily News just called him smug and condescending and highfalutin. I read this. Pablo's a
I'd love to have those
talented guy, former colleague of ours. So, yeah, you were the number two, though. Let's be honest. I mean, that's...
I'm filling on Oberman?
Yeah. If he's Spahn, you're Sane, right?
If he's
Bobby Orr, you're Esposito.
I filled
no,
in...
you were the number two guy, I'm saying. Keith was number one, and you're number two.
Yeah, because I filled in 24 times.
Right. If he's Jordan on the show, you're Pippen. You're not Horace Grant. That would... Pablo's Horace Grant.
That is an absolute...
Maybe Craig
perfect.
Hodges.
Perfect. That's Craig Hodges for Pablo.
Right.
But didn't you love that show?
I Keith's liked brilliant. A lot of it, yeah. I think there were parts of it that were unbelievably great.
That commentary, must watch.
Nobody does that anymore like
Oliver. So smart. John Oliver I love, though.
Yes, fantastic.
I think he's very funny.
And Simmons coming up. Well, it's going to be a different show. And I know he doesn't have the same skill set as those guys, but he's got very good people behind him, so
right.
It should be interesting.
And he's a great writer.
Yeah. All right, so listen, Adnan Virk has been the guest. He's wanted this for a long time. I hope he's still employed after this podcast. I think he will. I don't feel like he said anything so out of bounds. And he actually gave you some very interesting stuff about... I'm going to do the wrap-up here better.
I can't wait. I'm willing to watch the wrap-up.
This will be the wrap-up here. All right. Yeah, but he's in the studio, so I can't say back now when Adnan is gone. So, but he gave you a lot of interesting stuff about his faith, about his relationship with Schilling, took you behind the scenes of his audition, which I like, talked about some of the, you know, the people who he pals around with, the Max Bratoses of the world and people like that, and, you know, gave you a sense, if you're a young broadcaster, just the importance of being an agent. And what else did we learn? Is there anything else we learned during this podcast?
No.
A little bit about Canada.
I mean, we learned a lot of little.
Right. When did your parents, from Pakistan? Were you born there or born here?
No, I was born in Toronto. I grew up in Kingston, which is a few hours away. Doug Gilmore, Kirk Muller country.
Yeah.
But my parents, they actually
love the Canadian passport.
Oh, fantastic. They emigrated in 72. And I was like, Dad, that's so crazy.
Wow.
And people look at you and go, look at this Pakistani gentleman. He's lived in Canada like
for 40 years. Yeah, he's a Canadian.
Like, you're Canadian, man.
More Canadian than McCown, who was born in like Columbus, Ohio.
yeah, exactly.
All right. So we've learned a lot, Bet. Is there anything that you want to add to this as I move the microphone over, or should we just get out of Dodge?
Bet, did you regret this experience? I know it wasn't Katie Nolan, but I mean, did you?
You know what? This was pretty great. I have to say, Deitch, we need to get more in studio guests.
Yes. See, Bet appreciated that I trekked all the way from West Hartford, Connecticut, and you were furious. You go, I can't believe you're coming all the way in here. Yeah. Are you kidding? If it wasn't in person, I wouldn't have done it. Seriously.
Okay.
On the phone, it's so impersonal.
Listeners, if you like the in studio atmosphere,
once getting to this part,
tweet at Deitch and annoy him about it because I really appreciate it. I think everyone sounds good. I really liked how Adnan talked about his interview process with ESPN, kind of how to get in the car. You have to kind of have to drop everything, take a sick day. People don't realize, you know, when you're that's all the kind of stuff you gotta give up when you're looking for jobs and when you and like you said, you stayed persistent. What was it, 15 months you said?
15 months from the audition.
There you go. So guys, you know what? Every month, keep following up, keep maintaining your contacts, and maybe one day you'll get a job with ESPN.
I think the thing you forgot, Bet, of course, is that it's really about getting an agent. Then you can get a job with ESPN.
Without my agent, I'd have
forget,
none of
forget about the, you know. All right, so listen, Adnan Virk has been the guest. Coming up, by the way, thanks to Chris Hine, our previous guest on this podcast, who was incredibly honest about being an openly gay sports writer, covers the Blackhawks in Chicago, wrote about the Andrew Shaw incident, and that was very cool. Before that, Lewis Riddick and Jessica Mendoza, a lot of praise on that Lewis Riddick podcast. That guy totally nailed it. Coming up, Chris Webber, Adnan, is going to be following you. I don't know when, but that's a pretty big name.
Yeah, though, when you first tweeted, you go, coming up, it was me, Jess, and C. Webb.
Yeah.
And then someone was like, wow, C. Webb will be great. Yeah. Jess is pretty cool. Who's the other guy?
Virk, right. Great job getting Sam Virk.
Adam Burke sounds great.
Right. So I think that's coming up next week sometime, Chris Webber, but I'll get back to you on that. All right, listen, this is one of the longest podcasts. I've been told
is this longer than Heyman?
It's now longer than Heyman. I've been told too many times to cut it down. So let me thank, from the top, Dan Bloom of Panoply, Ryan Hunt, Paul Fichtenbaum, John Wertheim, Chris Stone, Ben Eagle, my producer, Alan Kim, but the real producer, Bette Marston.
Not Bette. David Price down here.
Right. David Price down here. That's what we call Bette. And, of course, for coming in, the third in-studio guest behind Paul Heyman and Zach Lowe, Adnan Virk of ESPN. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you next time on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.